Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Big Brother Canada 9 Think Tank podcast for the very first time. I'm your host, Taryn Armstrong, and we are here today to talk through some twist ideas for Big Brother Canada. With me here tonight is Liana. How are you doing, Liana?
I'm doing well. When you guys asked me to come on, I was like, no thanks. JK, all the thanks.
This is what you prepare. So just so everyone knows, this is our definitely the first time we've done this intro.
Absolutely. 100%.
And since the non-existent first time we did this intro, Liana was like, let me come up with a better intro. And this is what she came up with.
Okay, here's the thing, though, is it was, oh, I need to come up with a better intro. Okay, Liana, think of a better intro. Left my brain completely. Oh, no, Taryn's starting. I need to think of a better intro. Let me come up with something that's amazing. And then that's what came out of my mouth. So if that is indicative of what will happen tonight with my ideas, I'm a little concerned, but I know the audience has made a lot of wonderful suggestions that we will get to in this podcast.
Okay, well, also with us tonight here is Mike Bloom. How you doing, Mike?
I'm fantastic, Taryn. We've got a whole ball pit full of ideas, and we're ready to tank them to the tank, if you will.
Nailed it.
Finally, we've got Jenny. How you doing, Jenny?
I'm great, Taryn. You've got your token Canadian here with you tonight. I did not come up with a better introduction, so here I am as I'll be here to drop some A's and maybe try to give some context to Canadian sponsors that might not make sense to anyone else.
Sounds good. All right. Well, we are here, as I said, to talk through some ideas for Big Brother Canada. It's a good show. The one thing that most people will say about Big Brother Canada, they're twists. The twists on Big Brother Canada, it could be better. So we decided to do better, right? We're gonna talk through some ideas for twists that Big Brother Canada. I know they're always watching, so they're definitely watching us.
And I mean, that's the tagline. I think it applies to everything, right?
Exactly. So they're free. These are free ideas, royalty free, unless it's one of mine, in which case, hit me up. We'll see where we go from here.
Yeah. So, I mean, we got nearly 200 responses from the lot of Big Brother Canada fans, which really do run the gamut from, I mean, thank you to several of you who sent it and said no twists, please.
A lot of people.
The sentiment is appreciated. It will not be really encompassed over the course of this podcast, but we tipped your cap to you nevertheless. But we got some very ambitious ideas for twists to be brought to Big Brother Canada specific. This has happened in the past. I know that a few years ago, I got together with Rob, as well as Ian Terry and Spencer Clawson, to do a Big Brother US version of this. I actually recently, this past year, did an Australian Survivor version of this, because for some reason, we find the international editions of these American reality shows really like to have fun and play with the format maybe a bit more than those original counterparts. But either way, we're going to read through a bunch of your submissions for Big Brother Canada twists across a wide variety of swaths of the game we love so much proper. Maybe we'll walk away with the new, you know, toolbox of twists that might be used in future seasons to come. Who's to say? I guess even before we get into things proper, I would love to hear from the panel here, you know, with the asterisk, if you had to have a twist in a show like Big Brother Canada, is there any criteria in your opinion that like a good twist must satisfy?
I think that's an interesting question. I think for me, and maybe it's because I'm watching Ghost Island right now, but a big thing that I like in twists is the element of choice. And so when contestants are asked to make a decision in some way, not just, oh, you get this power, you get this, you know, whatever. If there's an element of choice, I always think that that's super fun. So anything that incorporates that, I enjoy.
Yeah, the key for me when it comes to twists is that it needs to be balanced. It needs to be something that will not interfere with the balance of the game, because I think that the number one killer of all seasons of Big Brother, of any reality competition reality show, is when the seasons are unbalanced and we get one side dominating the other, or we get something that just does not lead to anything interesting or chaotic. Instead, we just get like a steamroll. I'm thinking of like Battle of the Block, something really heavily favors large majorities. And that's the thing I think most twists fail at, is that they often benefit large majorities. Any additional aspect that you add to the game is typically going to be able to be gamed by a group of people working together that have a majority of people on their side. So that's, I think, the key weakness to most twists. And if I'm looking at twists that are going to be added to the game, I want to add things that will help balance the game even more while also making for entertaining television.
What about you, Jenny?
So further to what Taryn is saying, I am all about balance and fairness. And, you know, I really hate when there's, so I'm kind of a fan of seeing the odd casting twist. I think back to some of like the Big Brother US casting twists that weren't always good, but, some of them, like the X Factor and stuff like that, some of them were really interesting if they were fair. But it's like when you had Big Brother 8, where there were people in there that knew each other, but not the entire cast had someone they knew. I find that kind of thing interesting because I'm very like relationship focused when it comes to I'm very interested in, you know, underlying dynamics. And so I find like an interesting casting twist. If they're going to do anything, it's like, make it even. I hate when you bring back, you know, newbies mixed with returnees, do all or nothing. I want it to be equal. I want it to be balanced. I want it to be fair. So, I think that BB Can hasn't really dabbled too much with casting twists in terms of, all newbies, let's say. And I mean, everyone in Canada knows each other anyway. So I there's totally some opportunities for some sort of like undercover knowing each other type, twist. So, I mean, there's so many that are just so terrible that I'm willing to see something like this. You know what I mean? Right. Like give this a try, at least if everyone is coming in on the same page and it's not just like, oh, there's only two people that know each other. They have a leg up. If it were across the board, then I would be interested in something like that.
All right. So what Jenny's suggesting is just do an entire season at Stagecoach, I think is what we're going to do for Big Brother 23.
Yeah. Like a Canadian Stagecoach.
Yeah. which I don't know, is supposed what, like a covered wagon maybe. So to Liana's point, I think what I have sort of settled upon at this moment is that, in my opinion, good twists always involve two C's. And it's two, maybe we'll bring in more C's as we come along here. And that's choice and cooperation. Does the twist allow you to weigh the pros and cons and be able to make a decision of whether or not to utilize this twist? And is the twist able to allow you to bring in other people to share the information with and possibly collude with? Like, as an example, the Golden Power Veto is a good twist, in my opinion, because there's choice. You can choose to use it or not to use it, depending on how the game situation is. And you have to cooperate, because if you're not the HOH, the HOH is a two-step part of that authentication process and has to put up another person. And so it's not just you going rogue and having to make a decision on your own. There actually are other parties involved. So to me, all good twists involve some part of those two capacities. And I guess we'll see over the course of tonight whether or not that holds true for some of these other ones as well.
I like Mike over here sounding like he's at a corporate retreat. Okay, guys, today we're focusing on cooperation and choices. Well, here, when we work together.
Here is the problem. I do think you missed an important C, and that's one that Angie Layton would be able to tell you about, and that is cookies.
Cookies.
Yes. Yeah.
It's that needs to be at the retreat.
Very
exactly.
Important.
Also part of the retreat. Thank you.
Exactly. And no matter what, when you use the twist, you should get a cookie at the end of it.
That's exactly.
A Pavlovian response to get people to use the twist.
If cookies are up for grabs, anything can happen. That's all I'm saying.
Exactly. Do we, I guess before we open up the think tank, as it were, to let these ideas fly out, let me throw it out to the panel. Have there been any ideas percolating in anybody's head here as to any twists you all have to come up with to possibly use in a Big Brother Canada-like season moving forward?
I mean, I have nothing specific that I've thought of. Again, the element of choice, although now I want to incorporate cooperation and cookies in my thought process, is something, again, like I said, so important to me. So I think I'm just excited to hear what other people have to say. And then I want to be the one to like come in and tell you why this doesn't work or how can we add more cookies?
Yes. Something that I was thinking about, and it's not like 100% thought through yet. But, a little while ago when we were at, back when we used to exist in the real world, an RHAP live event, we played a little mini game of Big Brother at a dinner table over the course of 3 hours. And the entire game had to be spent in front of all the other players. Everything you said, pretty much everyone could hear. And it made for some interesting dynamics because it was hard to like talk through strategy with your alliance when the other people can hear what you're doing. And so something that I was thinking about was, what if there is like a double eviction where everybody has to spend the entire time sitting in the living room, talking out loud to everyone so that there are no backroom dealings. Every move that you make, if you want to, make a decision about what you want to do with your allies, you have to make that decision out in the open in front of everyone. Who are you talking to? Who are you collaborating with? Are you throwing out options for people? It's going to really limit what people are able to do and also potentially add some chaos if things are starting to pop off.
It's like the BB, the double eviction lockdown, essentially, yeah. where they say like, okay, the first vote happens, now it's a double eviction, but you have to stay in this room. They've done this a couple of times, right? Like I remember when there was a decide who comes back, you have to stay in this room until they decide who ends up coming back. So I feel like Big Brother Canada especially is not afraid to say like, listen, good luck going to the bathroom. You're going to stay here until you figure out exactly what you're doing here.
The thing that stands out to me is this is very similar to maybe kind of like a live tribal that we see in Survivor.
But no whispering.
So we do have to be able to hear everything. Okay, good. Yes, I think that's very important to note.
That's tough because I feel like originally Big Brother players also have problems with whispering in their daily lives in the house. That's going to be tough for them.
And so I think if it's something similar to that, my concern would be if everybody's so scared, then that just could favor the majority alliance. However, if the majority alliance has to say out loud, we're voting for this person, then it would be interesting, at least from a drama perspective, potentially, to see the ramifications of that.
I think it's something that should probably be done early. I think they should surprise the house guests, because the house guests are usually able to sort of suss out like, there's going to be a double eviction soon. Let's make a plan for it.
Sometimes it shows up on the screen behind the host when they're talking.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the pitfalls of this are that players often have plans for double evictions. If there's already a plan set in place, then you don't need to talk and it doesn't do anything. But here's the good thing about this twist. If it doesn't do anything, it's still fine. It's not ruining anything, right? I think the worst part is that in the niche scenario where a plan needs to come into place during the double eviction, that's a minority plan, and they need to talk about it, but they're too scared to talk about it in front of everyone else, then it could potentially squash something like that. I feel like that doesn't come up too often. Usually the minority has a decent idea of what they would need to do. I think it's something to play with. I think the timing needs to be right. You need to surprise people in the right way. And I don't think it needs to be in a double eviction. I think there are a few different places where something like this can happen. Like maybe somebody wins a veto and then lock you down. The decision has to get made. Nobody gets to talk privately. Something along those lines. They've done somewhat similar things before. The blood veto was another thing where they were all out there, and they had to decide, and that did cause some drama. So, I think the concept is interesting. That's where I'm at.
The only thing that, I mean, I've played a few orgs. So sometimes I think about like org twists and
basically
how they could
an
be
org
like
master.
So. I definitely do not claim to be, but I did play a game where there was a twist where you it was basically called the double or nothing twist. And you had the choice to hold your vote and you got an extra vote for a later vote. And it's different than like the Survivor one where, you know, someone wins like an extra vote to be used at a tribal council, where everyone has an equal opportunity to do this at any point in the game. And it's like, there's again, the element of choice of trying to decide when, you know, gambling your vote at a certain eviction is worth it to you because you think you're going to need that in your pocket later. I think that there would need to be like workshopping in terms of like keeping people from like team negotiating it too much, because when it played out in my game, like no one really talked about it ahead of time. It would just kind of, people did it. And then you'd try to figure out, you'd see the vote count and you try to figure out who voted, who didn't, who might have an extra vote in their pocket for a later round. And it does add like quite a bit of chaos, just not knowing, you know, who's got what and when they might decide to toss an extra vote somebody's way. It's just something that where at least everyone has that opportunity, and it's not like, oh, you randomly found something in a room and everyone has this choice that they can make at any given point in the game.
Yeah. And I think what I like about that, and a lot of these twists that we're going to talk about tonight involve, you know, when their power is given out, everyone has the power, because then at least if information is being spread, everybody knows about it. So it's not like a, oh, you know, I have this disruptor power. Well, I have this blocker power, and you have to sort of suss out exactly what the details are. And you're able to then make decisions, hopefully based on, okay, I can do this, but I also know this person might bank their vote, which this is very much, I think Lauren Rimmer did this in Survivor 35 as well. It was basically like, bank a vote now to have an extra one later. Right. And so there's a definite risk reward involved. And I do think giving everyone the opportunity, while it might provide a bit more messiness, where we might get like four total votes in an eviction because everyone decides to bank their vote in that moment, I do like the idea with a lot of these twists of making sure everyone has the opportunity to use it. I think that's what made the safety suite such an interesting twist in those first 3 weeks of Big Brother 22 as well, because that's when you're able to plan now around the fact that, okay, well, I have this, I know somebody else might have this, and how is that going to affect my decision making?
Yeah. What I like about it is that it adds a layer of uncertainty to every vote, where it's like, well, who's going to vote? And if they don't vote in this one, who might use an extra vote in this one? Like it adds, you know, a layer of like, well, theoretically this could happen, where most of the time you're like, well, theoretically, if this person flips and this person flips and then this happens, then maybe they could get enough votes. It instead becomes, well, if these people think that they can bank their votes and then these people play their extra votes, guessing that other people might be banking votes, then the vote could actually flip. I think that's good. You know, any element to talk about to make the week a little more exciting is always, I think, a good thing. I think the danger, as has been talked about, is, you know, the majority is going to be able to bank votes a lot more. If they have 10 votes to 3, then they can pretty safely bank 3 of those votes. And now they have got an extra 3 votes. Or any time they might have, you know, the one time Jessica wins an HOH, and then they manage to get, you know, whatever it is, if they somehow, you know, there's a flip that's going to happen, they're able to prevent it because they've got a few extra votes that they were able to bank up because they were the majority. I think that's the danger there.
For sure. And that's, which is why I feel like it needed to be workshopped in a way where it's like, I don't know, is it the kind of thing where it could be like a production rule where you aren't allowed to tell a fellow player if you have a banked vote or something like that? Or like, again, it would be really confusing because it's like, how are you supposed to figure out who has what and when? But like, again, adds more chaos to it. So I don't know, like what you're saying, Taryn, is it also could be the flip side, and it could be exactly what ends up having like the underdogs overthrow something, just not, you know, the timing of it all and people feeling comfortable. But I think that there could be a way that you could have production control how much information can be shared as part of like a game rule. I don't know exactly what that is and how to implement it, but I feel like there could be something there.
So I'll, you know, I guess copy myself from several years ago, and I'll bring up a twist that I suggested back during the BBUS think tank, because I feel like in the time that's passed since that original think tank, the problem of the blocked star slash perennial nominee has only become clearer and clearer. And so the twist that I recommended then that I'll sort of, you know, bring up again for discussion now is what I call pieces of veto, which is sort of a take on, for those that have seen The Genius season three, the Black Garnett twist, where essentially if you are nominated against somebody and you survive eviction, you are given a piece of a veto. And whether it takes two pieces, three pieces, four pieces, whatever it is, if you're able to put however many pieces together, that forms a veto that you can use, that you have in your pocket, you can use however you want. And the interesting thing, additional twist onto this, is that, you know, you can also give your pieces to other people. So if, for example, the four of us are in an underdog alliance and we keep getting nominated over and over again, because damn, the committee keeps steamrolling this, we have an ability to pool all four of our pieces together and make a full-fledged veto. That's going to hopefully disincentivize people from nominating the same people over and over again. This could be something that, even as small a gesture as, yes, these underdogs, if they're not able to win HOHs, they at least have some power to be able to remove themselves from the block proper. And perhaps this also congeals them more in a way where they hasn't been in the past. I think it's a way to hopefully not exactly encourage people to say, all right, I'm just going to nominate the same person again because I don't want to get any further blood on my hands. It makes sense from a game perspective, but it's not very fun to watch from an entertainment perspective. And hopefully this idea would be able to eradicate that.
I was going to say, I like Jenny's idea because it has a lot of pieces, like moving pieces. And Mike is literally suggesting pieces.
Literal
pieces. So I think it really goes together. Yeah, I think that's really an interesting idea because, you know, we're constantly talking about the majority alliance steamrolling, And this is a twist that can actually be advantageous for those who are constantly being put up on the block. So I, you know, yeah, how many pieces do you need? Is it two? Is it three? Because then the majority alliance would just be like, okay, I'm going to put you up. Oh, now it's the second time. Okay, well, now we're going to vote you out or something like that. Like, I do think that there's a way around it. But the idea of pooling pieces, I think, then is potentially key. And the details of the logistics could be worked out. But as a concept, I really love this.
Yeah, I think the idea of giving the surviving nominee something, I think, is honestly a solution to a lot of the issues I have with many suggested twists. Like Jenny's, for instance, instead of banking, what if you gave the survivor of the nomination or the eviction of a day an extra vote? Now that that person has an extra vote. Now, you're not able to squash the other side's votes quite as easily. They've got a little bit more power. One of the biggest reasons why majority alliances are able to steamroll is because not only because of like the structure set in place by the game elements, but also the social structure set in place by the fact that they are powerless. Somebody who is on the block was just begging for votes. They barely survive. They don't win HOH. They're still just seen as powerless. There's no point in aligning yourself with them. If they have extra votes or pieces of a veto, you have more incentive to talk to them, to engage with them, and to potentially align with them.
Yeah, and you might see fractures within the majority alliance, right? Because it's like the people that then want to try to fracture off, to pull the people in, to maybe make a move. I think that actually could be super interesting. So not only is it the power, but then also the power then leads to the social power within the game, which could then lead to people working with you.
But if they know that this is a part of the structure of the game and that the surviving person on the block gets this power, are we going to see a situation where, you know, it's like almost akin to like the battle of the block where it's like, hey, I just need you to, you know, be in this like competition or whatever, because we're working together and I trust you. And this is, I need you to be the person that gets this power so that we can use it later. And then there's just going to be like strategic pawns, you know, of each other's alliances.
Definitely, definitely possible. I think the hopeful counterbalance to that is at least you're getting one of the majority on the block. And that is an opportunity that you probably won't have most of the time in Big Brother.
Not only on the block, but specifically facing eviction. Because exactly. I do agree. I think that's a little different. Is I could see Caleb say like, yeah, I'll throw the battle of the block competition because like, yeah, there's a chance you could still compete in veto.
Because I'm going to win that veto.
Yeah, as everyone says in those umpteenth nomination speeches, like, oh, but you still got veto, fight it out. No, here, like, your neck is literally on the line. And outside of Matt Kleins, I can't think of many Big Brother contestants who would be like, sure, nominate me for eviction. Let me sit in those chairs come Thursday night. So I do think that there might be at least to Taryn's point, a little bit of like a pot stirring going on. If someone approaches you and says like, hey, I really trust you, but here's the thing, you're going to have to risk eviction to help me this week.
Who is it? Who's going to take the bullet, right? Who's the low person on the totem pole that has to sit up on the block in order to get an extra vote that probably doesn't help them, right? Or whatever the advantage is. It's you'd probably want to have some kind of time limit on it. So it's not like they can bank up advantages and then wait till the end of the game and now they've got the advantage in their alliance. No. This would solely be to help the group. And you're going to risk your life on the block to help the group when the vote could flip, you know?
Can we combine this with the gamble your vote just to make it even more risky to be like sitting on the block as being like, I don't know who's got votes and who's going to use them here. Layer more twists on top of each other until we get something.
Well, that's what we're here to do. So I guess, you know, we've gone through some of our own and we put our own ideas out there. Let's open up the think tank a little bit. And I guess the way this is going to work is that Taryn and I have sifted through some of your responses. Thank you again to those of you who did send in responses. I will say right off the top here, we are obviously not going to get to them all. So please apologies if we do not get to your idea. Also, we're going to have fun here tonight. There are some truly ridiculous ideas in here that we're going to talk through. So I don't want to hear they didn't really talk about any good twists. Like, we're here to talk about fun Big Brother Canada shenanigans, goofy twists and all. You know, we want to get to the Survivor equivalent of everyone on the island has a dog and you can vote someone's dog out. We're aiming for both that and maybe some more. Some twists that could actually legitimately be used as well. We're going to try to run the gamut here.
And truly, how many twists are actually that good anyway?
Yeah.
What are we looking for here? Well, diamond in the rough.
Exactly. We're going to go diamond hunting here. So the way we figured this would work is, so Taryn and I have gone through these. Leanna and Jenny have not seen them. So what I'll do is I'm going to give you the categories that these types of twists are separated into. And we'll sort of go category by category, depending on where you want to go. So we have, and I'll put these in alphabetical order here. The types of twists we can talk about are Canada's vote, casting, competition, eviction, HOH, jury, nominations, power, teen twist, and veto.
Well, Mike, you've already listed too many items that my brain can hold, my little pea-sized Canadian brain.
We can remember 10 numbers and a phone number.
No, I got up to evictions, and then I forgot everything you said after that. So anything that I pick will be from before the word evictions.
I have them in front of me, and I got lost.
I was like, I was thinking I had four categories, and I was like, oh. Should have been paying more attention.
It's okay. You don't need to memorize. We won't be testing.
There's no
after
quiz.
Oh, yeah. Thank God. I didn't sign up for that anyway.
Well, I mean, Jenny, do you want to hear about casting? That
I was gonna say
I thought you might. Yeah.
And it might make sense from like chronological I don't know. Yeah, let's go with casting.
All right. Taryn, I'll shoot it to you if you have the first casting twist that you want to read off.
All right, so let me look for. So what I did.
Everyone's a dog.
That's a category, right?
Oh, no, it's a dog-agory.
What I did was when I looked at these twists, I actually I categorized them within their categories. For me, I categorized them as, this is a great twist, I'm going to put it in. This is a good idea, maybe just needs a little bit of tweaking. And then like a middle kind of grade of like, it's got potential, but definitely needs some work. Then, this is probably not going to work. It would need some major reworking to work. And then just a bin it. Let's get it out of here. So, there weren't a lot of casting ones that I was huge, on here. But one of the ones that I looked at here was, we have Canadian heroes versus villains.
Oh,
so is this like an all-stars?
Yes, an all-star cast divided into teams of heroes versus villains, where each player gets a special power based on their affiliation. In the hero slash villain ceremony that takes place after the POV ceremony, a hero can take someone else off block, and the HOH has to nominate another person, and the villain can nominate an additional third nominee, like the MVP twist. They can only use their power once in the game, and only one hero and one villain can use their power in each ceremony. I would imagine it's just like who gets to it first. They feel like it could create some great, some interesting gameplay. And if everyone is fully aware of everyone else's power, and no one is inherently disadvantaged in the game, that is the twist.
Remember when we thought that there was going to be some sort of hero versus villain aspect to BBCAN 6 with the whole gatecrashers, like heaven and hell type thing? Yeah. And then it just wasn't really anything.
Lasted a week.
It was hell versus heaven. So essentially, this is it. But everyone's given their hell powers and heaven powers. I do find it interesting because we're going to talk about teams over the course of this, obviously, due to the admin of teams in Big Brother Canada 9. The idea of different powers for each team is really interesting to me because that almost incentivizes like heroes and villains to almost work together, right? Of like, well, I have chocolate and you have peanut butter, so like, let's make some Reese's, you know? Like, I have the, you could almost like stack these abilities on top of each other if you've got the right person in mind.
Okay, but that's the thing, is you can only use one per, right? Because I'm just thinking it's Uno. And someone's like, I put a third nominee up. And then the heroes are like, no, I take him down. No, I put him up. No, I take him down. And it's just back and forth. Look, I'm just happy it's not heroes, healers, hustlers for the twist. I love the concept of heroes, villains. And that is completely probably tainted by the fact of the Survivor season. Heroes, villains is so fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I do like that. I like that dichotomy. I think it's not as strong as setting up two teams. Because even though, yeah, there's a team element to it, it's not necessarily as strong. But the alternating twist, I think, is super interesting, or the alternating powers. I have to think a little bit more about that. I'm not a huge fan of the third nominee as a concept. Mm-hmm. And then wait, the hero would take someone down, but if there's only two nominees, then the HOH would have replaced them. Yeah. Okay. Never mind.
Yeah. I really like that they have different powers just because it gives more relevance to what camp you're in, essentially, as opposed to just like, oh, this is just the name of our side. And it's essentially like an alliance name or something like that. Like, I like it to have an actual meaning, and I appreciate that about this twist. And yeah, it's controlled that it can't get, out of hand, that it's like every round there's nonsense going on. So you can actually have some authentic gameplay. I don't hate it.
Okay. Yeah. So, go ahead, Taryn.
Well, I think overall that the villain power is a lot better than the hero power.
Villains have more fun.
It's especially because, and again, my brain will immediately go, how do I break this? If I'm in the game, how can I take advantage of this? And the way to do it is that if you have a majority alliance and you've got a few villains on your team at least, then okay, great. If we ever don't win HOH, we are going to make sure we nominate a third person. We use our majority votes to get that person out. I think the way to potentially counter that is that maybe the hero is able to block the villain's nomination, save the villain's nomination as well. But that just requires a lot more work and a lot more stuff that the underdogs would have to do in order to make their actual nominations go through. And that's a big problem with all third nominee twists, in my opinion. I think the concept, though, is interesting. I do, like you guys said, I like the idea that there are two different teams or themes or whatever that have two different kinds of powers. And I do like the sort of one use powers. I think those can be interesting for sure. But I think we would have to workshop like what those powers are. I would generally stay away from third nominees.
Mm-hmm. So I guess we should sort of, you know, when it comes to giving verdict, we had the Survivor version is what? Send it to Samoa or send it whatever. What's the Big Brother Canada version of it? Send it to the brick.
Yeah, Leon's the brick, or I don't know. What are the sponsors this year?
TikTok. What if we send it to Twistos? Because they don't do those anymore.
Send it to Twistos because they were the ones with the original twist. And you know what?
Discontinued.
And if we don't like it, you put it in the letter shredder, like Ica.
Shred it.
Shred it.
Wait,
exactly.
So Twistos is good?
Twistos is good.
Oh, yeah, I was saying Twistos is bad because the Twistos isn't a sponsor anymore. We could send it to.
Wasn't there a Leon's Lounge?
Yeah, well, because it wasn't the brick and mortar, now it's Leon's, right?
Yes.
We bring them to Wendy's.
Oh, there we go. Okay, we're bringing it to Wendy's. Yeah. Bring it to Wendy's,
and then the letter shredder. Okay, love it.
So I think that this would require a bit of retooling when it comes to the specific power itself, but I do think the concept, at least, is worth a date at Wendy's with Chris with Chris's mom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get a Baconator with it. Like, I'm down.
Yes. All right.
All right. So I'll read off one more casting twist before we move on, because as Taryn said, you know, there's only a few casting twists here. But you mentioned, Jenny, the devils and the angels. We got something because obviously there's rumors, as there always is, about returning players. And this person said, well, if they insist on bringing back returning players, they may as well bring back the 6 house guests from seasons 2, 4, and 6 that never even made it into the house. That way the game is fair all around. Technically, they were returning players, even though they never made it in. So what do you think of if there is a situation where, begrudgingly, Jenny, you mix newbies and veterans? What if the only people you can pull from with the veterans are those that were essentially screwed out of a chance of getting into the house in the first place in previous seasons?
I mean, I don't hate that obviously, like, for you know, bias, obvious bias, because I'm like, oh, who would get to go in the house then? But I mean, that is about as fair as it can get with, like, someone that isn't sight unseen. They're essentially a newbie, like you said. That's not terrible. I mean, at this point, they almost have a whole cast worth of people that have gotten screwed. Didn't we also have someone that didn't get in from BB Can 7 as well? Because it was Corey versus
Corey.
I forget. Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry to that woman. But so they feel like they've been doing this so much that they could give all those people an opportunity. But I feel like there are issues with why they probably will never do it. But it's not like having actual returnees that know each other. Well, again, that's the other thing is, like, these people do actually
know
each other.
Like,
Kirsten has met Mikey.
Yeah.
Like, all of that stuff. So there is kind of, you know, some bonds, like, oh, they've gone to, like, finale parties together and stuff like that. So it's not perfect. And I do worry that it's just another reason to target someone, be like, oh, well, these people had a chance. And you can just hear how, like, annoying people would be like, well, they had a chance and Canada didn't want them. So let's carry out Canada's wishes and vote them out. Like, I can just hear that happening. So I feel like you're kind of setting some people up for failure, unless it's, like, across the board. Again, it's like, it's never going to be perfectly fair. And I don't like that.
Yeah, I think for me, one of the few benefits of returning players is that, you know, you've got gold and you've got, like, established fan bases. And, like, these are people that you want to see back most of the time. And they don't always nail that. But, you know, that sort of helps to counteract the fact that they know each other and stuff. For me, you know, outside of the exception, this is probably a shredding moment for me, where
Taryn's exception, of course, is Scott, the amateur drag queen.
I don't know who else thought I was talking about.
It's tough because I think for me, it's still not a clean slate. Yeah. And the fact that not only are you intimately familiar with, like, the whole casting process, what happened last time, there's still some type of connection with being in the house and knowing everybody afterwards and hearing stories that the general public would not hear. I think all of those things are against the twist. Scott, but we're going to shred that one.
There is literally enough people for a whole cast.
A whole cast.
I mean, so if you count Big Brother Canada 8, there sort of is, right?
Well, I wouldn't count that. I wouldn't, just because they actually played and all met each other in the house and stuff like that. But, I mean, at the rate that they've done these stupid vote somebody in twists, like, we're almost there if they keep going.
Let me just amend it then. Okay. 15 new people and Jace Wiry.
Rob.
I wonder what he's up to these days.
I don't know, probably making goat noises somewhere, but it's like undercover Jace, where like nobody, his name is like, I don't know, Fred, and he's like, I don't know, a management consultant, and nobody knows that it's Jace Wiry.
I mean, we were really close to that in Big Brother Canada 4. Yeah. I mean,
how long do you think his hair is now?
Yeah, I think he's still wearing ground. A bandana for sure.
Yeah, right,
like, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I'm with Taryn on this one. I think I would shred this.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
We're shredding it. So we showed the good and the not so good that comes with casting. All right. Well, I put the rest of the categories up in the chat so that there's
Thank
no
you.
Name
okay,
for memorization.
Yeah. I'm a visual person, which is like terrible for this podcast.
But we have so like, the remaining categories we have are Canada's Vote, Competition, which are new sorts of competitions outside of the ones that we usually have, Eviction, HOH, Jury, Nominations, Power, Team Twist, and Veto.
How you feel, Liana?
Well, if we're like going chronologically, I'm like, what's next?
Team twists.
Okay, yeah, let's stay on the team twist. Let's get our heroes.
It's still kind of related to casting, sort of, I guess.
Okay, yeah, anyway. Okay, we whatever, we pick
it's team beginning twist. Game, I feel like, at least, I don't
choices
know.
Cooperation, cookies, we pick team twist.
Okay, perfect. And it's the most pertinent, right, because we know officially mm-hmm. that Big Brother Canada
exactly
have teams affiliated with it. So right. Taryn, what's on the docket?
I actually have two team twists that were full on. I think this is a great idea. One of them, let's see, I'll go with this one first, and then we'll see where we go from there. This one is called First Night Team Twist, or it is a First Night Team Twist. On night one, all 16 house guests compete in a Survivor-esque comp, or any kind of competition. They are told the winners get safety and power. The first three house guests who complete the competition get safety and and the right to choose their teams. Big Brother warns them to choose carefully. After the three captains are finished choosing their team, that leaves us with four leftover players. The Big Brother then reveals that not only will those four house guests be given safety, but they will be competing in the competition again for the HOH. So after this competition, the Misfit Toys, who would have gotten targeted for not fitting in to the groups, they weren't chosen for the teams, they're the ones that are safe. And the three house guests who won the competition are also safe. That leaves us with the rest of the group that were picked to be on teams have to fight for their survival in the first week.
Yeah, so this is essentially like one of those, it's sort of like the slop token twist, right? Of like, oh, you think it's this one thing, but wait, it's actually the opposite. And I can imagine they could finagle the language to just say, choose teams, and not necessarily choose the teams that you're going to stick with. They'll make assumptions, and in making those assumptions, then they'll sort of end up screwing themselves over, or those people will, because then they've essentially left a bunch of people that would ordinarily be, for example, if this was like the camp counselor thing from Big Brother 21, the four people picked for that competition would be safe, and then everyone else who either didn't fit in or won the competition is now up for grabs.
Yeah,
I love a old gotcha bitch kind of thing. So, and I mean, giving power to people that might have been outcasted, like from, you know, the jump, is very interesting to me.
Exactly. I mean, we've learned how important the first HOH can be in setting the tone the whole game, and so I thought this was a clever way of making sure that the least likely people to be in the majority end up with the HOH in the first round. And I like how fair it ends up being, that the people that win that competition, they're still safe. They didn't completely screw themselves right over, but you know, they're gonna have to deal with the fact that that the people that they didn't pick are now in power, and that will, I think, help create a nice balance of like, these people won the competition, they picked teams, but these people are in power right now. And so where are you going to go?
I really like this. I think this could be super interesting. I love the concept of the kid who gets picked last in dodgeball now gets to hold the dodgeball themselves and throw it at the other players. So that's
as you do in dodgeball.
As one does. Yes, of course. And so I like that. And I like that it happens right away. Right. So I like that this is already upsetting any potential power structure that might happen in the game, like right from the get-go. And the fact that the people who were not chosen are immediately ostracized, but then immediately, like, you know, however many seconds later when Julie Chen messes up and reveals the twist too early, assuming, oh no, this is canon.
But Arisa's not going to do that.
Never going to do that. Yeah, exactly. What am I saying, queen? Okay, so yeah, when Arisa executes us flawlessly, then we'll get to see that immediately crumble. So I am totally all in on this.
This is like if when Jackson shows the four people to Outcast in Big Brother 21, those people then were the only people eligible to be HOH, and Jackson got safety that week.
And how much changes there?
Right?
It's not too dissimilar from the way that Big Brother 18 opened, right? Where the Freakazoids were the last place team and the only ones that were up for elimination. But then in turn, they were the ones that produced the first HOH. So I really do like this idea of picking someone up from the bottom and then immediately giving them power, because that's what we like the most about Big Brother, right? That's why its game is so much fun, is because you have to plan for the fact that the person that you're plotting against could easily get in power the very next week. And I think this helps facilitate that a little bit.
I do like sort of see a situation where like the people that picked teams and are safe are like, I mean, I my brain goes to like this like bullying type mentality of like the schoolyard pick sort of thing. And it's like, you know, like I just envision them strong arming. It's like, well, you only got this because of like, you know, and like trying to manipulate it to get what they want somehow. But again, I still love the idea of people having to grovel at the feet of people that they would have disregarded. And that is like chef's kiss to me. So I still am a big fan of this.
Well, and I think I like that you brought that point up, Jenny, because then the thought of, oh, retaliation the next week, right? Of right. like, okay, well, we've got the majority. So now that y'all are out of power, you're going up on the
block.
Like it's done. I would hope that the extended time of the first week breaks that up maybe a little bit more. And then I don't know, then what do you do with the teams after that? Was that in the description? Sorry, it was a lot to take in when you first read it.
there was no description of where to go after that, whether this team stay in place or they just dissolve after that first week. I think either way is fine. I think the key is that this gives the people who didn't necessarily immediately fit in a chance to hold power and get into some kind of group. Yes. And that's, I think, you know, even if there's retaliation after, at least there was an opportunity to even start something.
Right.
I wonder if it would be as impactful and if there would not be as much retaliation if they were simply safe and didn't get the chance to be HOH, because I could see people being like, but they like, this was part of the thing, and like they were picked last. But instead, maybe not. I don't know. Like it's like neither the captains or the bottom people are HOH, and it's like I don't know how to fix that. But I, without pissing off the people that like won the competition, being like, I didn't win anything. That hashtag this
they
is not
safety.
An advantage.
They won safety,
I guess. Right. And then maybe, you know, maybe if they're not putting too much attention, because that's the thing is like, you know, the caveat of winning that first HOH is yes, you get everyone coming to you and you definitely get to like imprint your, you know, your footprint on the game or whatever, that it does shine a light on you. And maybe these people just need a week to like make some relationships and, you know, not have the spotlight on them. So maybe like them going for HOH might be putting them at risk and cause for retaliation. Whereas if they're simply safe and they're just a necessary vote for whoever wants to have happen, then at least they're being brought into the fold without being, you know, a target for the following week. But again, that could just be like, well, these were the people who were at the bottom and we've decided this anyway. So when they're all vulnerable next week, we're just going to go for them anyway.
See, I have a logistic question.
Wait, can I answer my logistics question so I can think? Okay, just real quick. So the person of the four, are the other three safe? Like the person who wins HOH and the other three are safe?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Taryn.
Yes. I feel the opposite way, actually, where I feel like I don't want people on the bottom to have safety immediately. I want to give them a kick to like, no, don't be too passive. Like, get right. going, mm-hmm. play this game. Yeah. This Fight. Is give, yeah. get some power and make this happen. You know,
that's fair. It's hard to avoid. And again, it's like, how quickly is this happening? How many conversations are happening before, you know, these people are picking teams? What are they picking the teams based on? Are they, you know, just choosing on physical strength and it didn't end up being that those people were the people they would end up working with anyway? Or like, there is a lot of ways that it could go. I just do have the same concerns about like, okay, well, it's cool that we got like, you know, maybe like a Michael Stubley-esque first boot instead of like an outcast type person. But what happens next week? It's, you know, they're going to be vulnerable and they're just going to go out anyway. I'd like to avoid that. Although I would love to not have it be the typical first boot.
Yeah. I mean, this is just the way to kick it off. So
yeah,
we can deal with future weeks. Well, with future
yeah. So I need to think about it all right now. We need to play
it out. What do you think? The whole season, Wendy, Shredder, somewhere in between. What do you think?
I'll go to Wendy's. I'll have some spicy nugs with this.
I want to try it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like even if all the things that Jenny's saying do ultimately happen and I'm like, yeah, that was horrible, I hate this, I still mm-hmm. want to try it. Like, I want to try the sandwich.
The thing is like, you know, people become outcasts in the first week anyway. So it's like, you know, if we're most worried about the retaliation the next week, it's like, okay, well, it's the next week instead of the first week.
Yeah, so, exactly.
I mean, you might as well try it.
Yeah. Delay the inevitable. Yeah. All right, so I'll move into one, and we'll see if I end up getting Taryn's second one here.
I don't want to just credit Brock Tree in the chat is saying that they were the ones that came up with this one.
Thanks, good one, Brock. Great yes. idea.
I thought this All was right. great.
So well, here's another team twist idea. So this is going to the two team, assuming these are the two teams, basically, from Big Brother Canada 9. Two people will share one HOH. One person from each team, each HOH only has one nomination, and they have to nominate someone from the opposite team. And they said this would only go for about 2 to 3 weeks so that people in power don't have too much time to game the twist into benefiting them. They basically say why I personally would prefer this to other team twist is essentially that it would limit, you know, one team just constantly winning HOHs and taking out people from the other team. So it's guaranteed one person from each team is going to win HOH, and then they each nominate someone, which I believe Shelby and Jason did when they shared HOH and Big Brother OTT. So they're each going to nominate someone from the opposite team, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you
Taryn
have thoughts?
Sounds enthused. No, I'm just, we're waiting with bated breath, Taryn. You sound so enthused.
I thought this one was, I feel like it probably wouldn't work, mostly because if two people from each team are going up on the block every time, then what that does in my eyes is it really incentivizes the teams to stick together and vote together. And once mm-hmm. they get the numbers advantage, just continue to vote as a team as often as possible. Like, I mean, it's essentially encouraging pagongings, right? Where once you get the numbers, maybe you can let one of your people go, but you need to make sure that your team keeps and holds the numbers so that you're able to win anytime somebody from your team goes up on the block.
But right. Well, that first vote is super interesting, right?
The first vote would be interesting. Yeah.
I want to make sure I understand. Okay. So there's two HOHs and they each get one nominee, but they don't have to agree on the nominees, right? Nope, like you get carte blanche, whatever, whoever you want to put up, but it has to be from the other team.
Yeah. It's just instead of two people, you have to nominate one. One thing that I personally see, and I think that the person who wrote this twist even put this in here, I think the biggest trap is that you're going to essentially encourage a big alliance to happen. Just not yeah. intra-team or whatever the prefixes are of, okay, now you have a group of like 4 to 6 people form across two teams yeah. that are just going to keep cycling the HOHs between themselves, hopefully, and keep remaining in power. So it's less so the teams, which I'm assuming were brought in purposely to break up this idea of, you know, cobbling in an alliance and steal in the very first night. Now you're doing that just now across two teams instead of on one team.
Yeah, you're almost like creating like the the like blueprint for how alliances are going to work in the game, because it's like, okay, well, you're going to have the people at the bottom of your team that you find like dispensable, and then the people on the other team that you're going to work with, and then what, however many it ends up being. And it's like, you keep those people safe on both sides, and you just pick away at the bottom people on both teams. Like it's, you know, defining how the game might go.
And I mean, it does sound like, how many weeks would this happen? Because I think
that's the first 2 to 3 weeks.
So I guess it's not forever, but
the length of the safety suite.
Yeah. I do think though, that still solidifies, because that was the first thing that I thought of was, oh, okay, so then you just get like five people from each side, you make this mega alliance, bing, bang, bong, like you're done, sing, sing, song, it's all over. And so and then even if it ends, it doesn't matter. Like those people are already working together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I'm good shredding it. Let's put it in the shredder here. I think in general that I'm not a fan of the two HOHs idea. Well, I think there is this idea of like, oh, it can lead to more fun chaos. I don't know. I just feel like you're much more likely to get collusion rather than conflict, just because, especially if it's in the early stages of the game, really nobody's going to be like, hey, I just met you and I hate your freaking guts, so no way am I nominating alongside you, you dirty asshole. Like, say, outside of Kevin and Aaron being HOHs together, I don't see anybody doing that.
Boy.
Wow. I just met you. This is crazy.
Yeah, I just don't know why I had to be dirty.
Yeah, those two words together were...
They haven't gotten a bidet in the BBC. Yet, so that's why.
Gotcha.
It's a spritz of water.
You got it on the toilet.
Oh boy.
All right. I did have one other team twist that I thought was very interesting. This one was, it says, offer the two team captains a prisoner's dilemma. If one of them reaches the final 10 or however many, with more members remaining than the other team, then that team captain will receive, say, $5,000. The amount of money can change. If each team reaches the final 10 with exactly the same amount of members, exactly five people each, then both captains will get a much larger amount of money. Say, $25,000 was the suggestion, maybe even more. In Canada, they couldn't do more because that's already a fourth of the prize money. But a larger amount of money. If either captain exposes the dilemma to any other house guest, the deal is off. Neither captain is eligible for the extra cash. It does not matter if a team captain gets voted off. Pre-jury, if the parameters are still met, then they will still get paid.
So is this...
Well, you just get...
This is
paid even if you did nothing.
So let's just assume that, like, so these captains get voted on by Canada in the first week. We're to assume that they remain team captains, and so they're the ones that are going to earn this extra cash.
Like whether or not they actually have a function as the team captain, or if they're just two people who are definitely who were voted team captain at first, but it's a ceremonial role or whatever it is. Those are the two people offered this deal, and they are the only two people that will know about it unless for the entirety of the game, unless they say something.
It's like Team America-esque, but like without the tasks. And it, well, I guess it is a task, but making money if they accomplish it.
Yeah, the part that I really like the most is, like you said, the prisoner's dilemma, or this is more so seen in like the split or share model that was used in a lot of reality shows, right? Okay, here's your prize pack. You can either share it, or like one of you can choose to split and if the other one chooses share, then you take the whole pot. But in this case, it really, really, really incentivizes you to work together. And I just find it's a situation that I feel like would not happen. I don't know. I think it's an interesting idea, but I can really see in very little circumstances being able to somehow get to the final five and orchestrate things in a way perfectly where it's 5 and 5, so you get an extra $25,000. It's a fun offer, but I don't think it's ever going to be met.
Yeah, that's one of the things I liked about it, is that there's very little downside. It's not going to mess anything up if it fails. It's just not going to play out.
It needs to be riskier.
From production's end, it's very easy to like put this in the game and not have to worry, will this break the game? Will this cause bad things to happen? It's if it works, then you're getting good things. And if it doesn't work, then you haven't lost anything.
Well, I also just don't like that if, you know, the captain gets voted out, that they can make money off of something that played out in the game that they had nothing to do with, potentially. Like, that part I'm not a huge fan of. It's like, oh, okay, like, this captain gets voted out week four and like five of their team mates make it to the final 10 and they make money.
They're like, along this line, though, could this be something a little different where it's like, if we're sticking with the team captains, if one of your team members, you know, if one of your team members isn't evicted that week, you get like an extra $1,000 or something. And then if someone gets evicted, you get nothing. So it incentivizes this person slightly more as a captain to maybe try to push a little bit harder if one of their team members is on the block to survive and say, oh, this could get actually a little bit of extra money in my pocket. And it could roll.
I like that better.
How many times your team members get nominated and survive?
The part that I don't like is that I'm confused. That aside,
sorry, my life, Liana.
I'm like, okay, wait, hold on. Let me process everything. However, the part that I do like is that there's added elements of choice. And the fact, though, that is it's only like one or two people, though, because it really ultimately then comes down to the team captains. But the team captains then have to choose whether or not they want to try to go for it, choose whether or not they want to put in the energy to try to convince the other people that this is something that they're going to have to do. I do like that part of it. And like, if I'm thinking about, okay, how do we game this? Like, how does a big alliance game this?
And they not talk really. About it?
They're, they no, can't,
they,
right?
Like, they you're, can't, yeah. They're not supposed to say anything. Exactly. Or the money is gone.
So, exactly. So, I would approve of it from that perspective, that right. There's no way for that large alliance to game it.
Yeah.
I like the more of the idea that Mike had, where it's like more about like little bonuses for each person from your team that stays, as opposed to like a certain number making it to a certain point, especially if they can make that money after leaving the game themselves. But it's still either what, I don't know. I think I still shred it, maybe.
What do you think, Liana?
Please don't make me answer. I'm still thinking. I honestly would be, if they implemented it, I would be like, okay. Like, I wouldn't be super excited about it, but I wouldn't mind it either. So I'm like smack dab in the middle. I'm like going to shred some Wendy's because I don't know which one I'm going to go with.
Put those square fries in the shredder.
I'm like picturing like a bun going in and burger, getting like stuck and it like the shredder one. Catching fire or something.
I would bring it to Wendy's. I think there's very little downside in trying it, and I think it could lead to some interesting scenarios. So I'd bring it to Wendy's.
I guess it if it flops, it doesn't ruin the game. It's just like, exactly. Oh, this was nothing.
Yeah, and that also comes down to also the sort of twist philosophy, right? Of like, are the worst twists the ones that are big and screw up the game, or the ones that did nothing at all? And that really depends on what you define by a twist. Yeah. I personally would shred it just because I don't think it's something that realistically happened, though I think it could be maybe an added bonus. Well, let's move on here. And you know what? You set a nice little ball rolling here. Let's just go chronologically through the Big Brother week. And let's go to HOH. So basically, all right, I'm gonna throw something out here that I think is a very interesting idea, because in the past couple of seasons we have seen anonymity make its way through various twists in The Amazing Race, right? Like, this power was used. Why I say The Amazing Race, Big Brother. This power was used. This person's nominated, etc. And so what this person suggested was an anonymous HOH. The HOH is won anonymously. Nominations are anonymous. And so they also threw in this caveat of like how the house guests have the ability to, like, they have to guess who the HOH is. And if they get it right, then like the HOH loses their vote for the next week. I don't know about that. But what do you all think about the idea of there being a week where the HOH's identity is not known? We lock that room upstairs and people, I don't know, maybe they just like, it's like the hacker competition, right? Where like everyone's in a booth, someone wins HOH. They don't need to tell anybody, and all nominations are made anonymously.
Can they tell anybody, or are they not allowed to tell anybody?
I mean, I think they can, because I think that just like the hacker twist, I think it'd be really fun if multiple people said, I'm HOH.
Yeah. I don't hate that. It's kind of fun.
Here's an issue I would have with it, especially if they can tell people. I would imagine then incentivized to tell people and say, don't vote for me when you're voting who you think the HOH is. Otherwise, I'll lose my vote and I won't be able to help you next week. Like be on my side. Don't choose me. And I feel like that would make it easy to get out of that. So I feel like you'd have to not, it would have to be that you're not allowed to tell people, but even then you're not incentivized to guess anybody in your own alliance because you don't want them to lose their vote. Then it's a matter of like, well, how many people need to guess the right person before they lose their vote? Does it have to be a majority or does it have to be a certain amount? How can you predict how many you would need?
Yeah, I'm not sold on the whole like detective mole quiz concept of guessing who the HOH is, because I also don't like the additional step of, oh, and then they lose their vote the next week. I feel like that's too much. But I don't know. I really do like, or I'm interested in this idea of an anonymous HOH, because that can also allow someone to, again, if they're so afraid about getting blood on their hands, I do think the idea of anonymity certainly helps things. That's why Hinky votes have been you know, so popular as well, is because you can really shroud yourself under mystery when it's just you talking into the DR. The other stuff maybe I'm not entirely sure about.
Yeah, I think this could maybe work if you wanted to incorporate the losing of a vote. It would have to be something like you can't get caught at all. Like, we're watching you all the time. If anybody if anybody is like, nah, it's you. And you get caught or you admit it, or like, I think the problem is, how do you judge what does it mean to be caught? If somebody accuses somebody, what does that mean? But I think the anonymous HOH can also work well as a first HOH. The very first HOH is anonymous. The goal is to not get caught at all. And if you don't get caught, whatever that means, whatever, you know, sort of qualities they want to put on that, then you don't lose a vote, or you get something extra or something along those lines. That could help prevent the sort of like first HOH benefit of being able to create your own alliance structure, because everyone's coming to you. They're not coming to you. You don't know who to go to. You don't know who has power. And that's going to help, I think, prevent big groups from forming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if you can tell people about it, then I think this plays out like essentially every other HOH. If someone in the majority alliance wins, the person in the majority alliance tells the majority alliance, they put two people on the outs, up on the block, done deal. Someone in the minority alliance wins, they're going to put up two people from the majority alliance. They might not tell anybody about it, but they're still going to do the same move anyway. The only way that I think it could be interesting is if someone in the majority alliance is now, under the veil of anonymity, is excited to make a move against someone in their own alliance. That's the only way that I could see it playing out. I think to do it in the early weeks or the first week or something like that definitely strengthens it. Or I mean, even that's the thing, is like, even if they can't tell anybody about it, I think it could still be the same person. The minority alliance puts up two people from majority, right? So when there's more moving pieces in the house and the alliance structure is not so set, I think is where this could be much, much, much more interesting.
Yeah,
I think that this is a pre-jury twist. I think so.
For sure.
The last thing I'd want is for this to be the opportunity for the majority alliance to take a shot at itself without getting any blood on their hands. Like, oh, perfect. This is our opportunity to get rid of Dani without having her mad at us for a week. Great. Easy. Oof.
Yeah, it has to be like a first 4 weeks kind of twist for sure.
Yeah.
It's kind of like being the imposter and like you can't get like any votes. Like if you get a vote, then you get a penalty of some sort.
Well, there could be an interesting modification on this, right? Where, to your point, maybe there's two HOHs. They have to like each nominate someone, and if they get caught, then they're both nominated.
If they get caught, meaning that if someone
figures out who they were,
if someone figures out,
is it just a j'accuse, it's you, or is it
you'd have to figure out what it means to be caught.
Exactly. Like, that's the really hard part, because it's like, well, does each person get one guess, and if so, can you how do you prevent them from coordinating so that they guess everybody?
It's almost like that sequester twist with the, I'm bad at remembering this shit, but where you have to figure out who the killer is.
The detective one. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like you get one guess. And if no one ends up guessing, but then if you're doing that early in the game, there's enough people that like probability, exactly.
And if you put it into the hands of one person, then what if that person is aligned with the person that is the HOH? There's no incentive for them to guess that person. You know, it's,
yeah.
Does everyone compete in POV? Not this version, the previous version, the anonymous HOH.
That's a good question. No, I mean, I think what
probably just be,
it could be like, it could just be like the two nominees do like a random draw of the remaining three people.
Okay.
So then, because remember, Big Brother Canada, HOH doesn't compete in the veto competition.
That's right.
So I'm good to take this out for a Frosty. Like you said, I think that there's some wonkiness as to when it would take place, but I do think it's an interesting idea to initiate and at least see if you have, you know, if you're essentially an avatar instead of a person for a week, would you play differently as an HOH?
Yeah.
You're all put as robots in the house.
Oh no. Watch out for the dream. Curb.
I'm gonna shred it.
Yeah,
sorry,
I'm shredding.
Jenny,
it doesn't matter. I'm either just gonna tie it or like I'll just
your vote matters, Jenny.
It does. Jenny.
No, I feel like it doesn't.
What if one of us was secretly banking a vote right now?
Oh my god! Exactly. No, see, this is why that's a good idea. yeah, it's. I think it needs too much like modification to make it make sense, and I just don't know that it does, that it works, so I'm gonna shred it too, sorry.
Taryn,
but I would dip a fry in the Frosty first.
Aww.
Ooh, for a little taste,
a little sweet and savory. Taryn, yeah. you got an HOH twist that piqued your interest from what we got sent to us.
This one, they said that this was a suggestion in a previous think tank, and that it was received positively by me. So turns out
like
it was received
lighting as well. Taryn really liked this one.
Turns out it was received positively twice. So this is one. It says the House will have the option to vote the HOH out if they want. However, they can only
Tyrant Master
into it.
They can only vote the HOH out if it's a unanimous vote and everyone votes together for the HOH. Otherwise, if the vote is not unanimous, then whichever nominee receives more votes will end up leaving. So the idea is that since voting out the HOH is all or nothing, it theoretically could encourage people to sneakily try and control the vote by throwing one vote against the nominees. So basically, yes, you can plot an overthrow, a mutiny of the HOH, but every single voter needs to be on board with that. If just one person anonymously votes for one of the nominees, then
they go home with one vote,
fails, and that person goes home with one vote.
That's rough.
Wild.
I love coup d'etat by committee.
Right.
It's really fun.
What's kind of interesting about this is that the nominees are kind of incentivized to stop this from happening, lest the, you know, one person end up sending them home. But one of the nominees might be trying to encourage it because they feel like they have no chance anyway.
Yeah, like they're going home. So if it's not them, they gotta get,
exactly. Or trying to orchestrate a fake out, get a bunch of people to vote for the HOH so that their buddies can save them with their one or two votes. I think one of the reasons why I like this one is that if you just provide it as an option, it's probably not going to ruin anything. I think there are very few scenarios where this like makes the game balance super off. It probably doesn't happen that often because it's too risky. But if it does happen, that'd be interesting, right?
I just feel like it only happens when you have like a Devin Shepherd HOH.
I would say, does this not encourage HOHitis? Because we love HOHitis.
Yeah.
HOHitis.
Because I feel like so often people are just like appease the HOH. And, you know, depending on like on what week this happens that like, or is this an every week twist?
Like, I think it would be an every week twist. If you just did it once, it was very unlikely. I think that it would end up happening.
It'd be really unfair to that HOH. I don't know. It's hard. I feel like there's not a lot of situations where it actually goes through. But again, that's so hard to say when you don't know what the dynamic looks like. But I like that it makes it interesting up until like there's like a third, there's a third option without it being a third nominee. I don't know.
It's never gonna happen.
Yeah,
it might happen. I could see it happen like once or twice at the jury stage if it's still offered there. You know,
or is it like for the lulls just because it's never happened before? They're like, oh, let's fucking do it.
I think it's much tougher to do it when you have 11 people voting than if you have 4 people voting.
Right. Yeah.
I at the end of game, actually, I think is when it could possibly be interesting. Sure. But I still think that this twist favors the majority alliance.
Yeah, I mean, the majority is much more likely to control this. I think, again, you'll probably notice this in most of the twists that I like of the suggestions, is that there's no immediate downsides. There's nothing that like this can really break other than like, you know, instead of Devin going home in a slow week after his HOH. There's a mutiny that happens on his HOH and he gets sent home that week, which is a lot more exciting, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Right. So like on the off chance that it does happen, I think it's interesting and it does provide an alternate thing to campaign for, an alternate strategy to work on when you're on the block. Again, likely won't happen ever, but it's just one of those things. Add that rule in and then wait for a scenario where it might be interesting.
Yeah, the only thing I feel really bad for is the inevitable scenario where it's one underdog versus an entire alliance, right? Yeah.
I think you have to cut it off at a certain point, because I think that's much more likely to have like final 7-6, like that's a point where five or six people can easily get together.
And if you win a clutch HOH that you needed so badly, and then they're just like, haha, just kidding. Sucks to be you.
Yeah, if Donnie won in BB16, they're like, oh no, sorry, Donnie, you're actually gone now.
What if it's, kept early game. Also, it's not an automatic every week thing. And it's like something that needs to be like enacted. Like it's almost like, oh, somebody hit the mutiny alarm. And it can't be a nominee. It has to be someone else by the HOH kind of like decides to press a button or whatever that enacts like the mutiny option, and then it becomes an option for the week. So there has to be somebody that makes the decision to have that as an option on the table. So they at least feel like, hey, might as well give a shot. And it's not going to be something that's like, everyone's just going to go along with the HOH anyway, so there's no point to it. And it's not like something that happens every week.
Like you get one mutiny button press per season.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm calling a mutiny.
Ding, da, ding, da, ding, da, ding.
Oh.
I think if you know that there's only one time that it can happen, I don't know. If it's not an option available to you every single week, people, again, there's the decision part in it, not only the decision of whether you actually do it, but like the decision of whether this is the week that you decide to do that.
I would also say, like, if the HOH wins the veto that week, then they're safe.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do think it's like a coup d'etat situation. It's a post-veto. Where whoever wins the veto is safe.
Mm-hmm. Post-veto mutiny.
It's a post-veto mutiny. Yeah.
So the thing for me is that I think, first of all, it's never going to happen. And if it does happen, I think that the Devin scenario that Taryn thrown out is probably the only like upside scenario that ever happens. And so you could always have it there as an option. So I guess like, what's the harm? I just want to dedicate airtime to the pirate twist. I'm all for throwing in twists from Pirate Master, but I'm not captivated by this. So I would shred it.
I'm going to shred it with a cutlass.
Yeah, I think it's a fun idea. Like, I love the idea of a mutiny, but I just don't see it ever really coming into practice.
Dude, that'd be so cool, though, if it does happen.
Yeah.
It's a mutiny!
I'm bringing it to when I'm all about providing players with as many options as possible. So I would just throw it in the mix.
I like the idea of having to make the decision on when to do it as well, like on top of it just not being like an option every single week.
I mean, I will say, like, I would not want to sit through a segment every single week.
Yeah,
every week. Yeah. The house guests are given the opportunity to mutiny.
No,
they can't do that. Like, no.
Because because you're the other thing is like, you know, if you're choosing when you can press that mutiny button, you have to think that if there's like 12 people still in the house, that the chances are that it's going to be successful is very low. So there's a sweet spot where you think that you might be able to make it happen and you've got some time to convince people to do it. Whereas like, you know, if you're just doing it for like shits and giggles on like the second week because your friend's on the block, it's not worth it and it might help you later. So there's like at least a decision element in there. But again, I still really fail to see the opportunities for it to happen. So.
Well, don't worry. I found the best HOH twist. Have a boxing tournament where the winner is HOH and has the sole vote to evict between the bottom two finishers.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Just imagine
love
a bunch of
boxing
like,
and BB.
Imagine a bunch of like same. Beaten and bloodied, bruised BB contestants getting up to like give their eviction speeches to this one crowned champion.
I just that's what I've been saying this for years. Big Brother needs more boxing.
Yes.
I think we and all can agree on that.
Heard you, Taryn.
Finally. I mean, it took long enough.
I know.
Taking it into their own hands, but yeah, here we are.
All right, well, let's move into nominations as the HOH is crowned here, whether anonymously or in person. So here's something that I have that has been around a lot. I've seen this actually in a lot of fanfics as well for Big Brother. Sorry, Taryn, we're talking about third nominations. Essentially, it's really simple. The HOH nominates three house guests. And then basically the veto must be used to take one of them down, leaving two people to face the vote. So this is no back doors. There's no renominations. It's just you put up three people. One of them is guaranteed to come down and then you vote between the other two of them to go home.
Yeah.
Did this happen already? Oh, no, it was just what was the twist where you put up the third nominee if that person got taken down? There wasn't a renom.
Yeah. So that was the temptation competition. That stuff in BB19. But in this case, there's no third competition. There's no otherworldly presence. This is just HOH nominates three people. One's guaranteed to come down. One's going to go home and one stays through the eviction vote.
So how does veto work with this? So
somebody wins the veto. They are forced to use it on one of the three.
They can't not use it.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And then nobody is the replacement. My issue with this one is that I think this one hinders the entertainment aspect of the show, where once there are three people on the block, nobody else has to worry at all. Nobody else is going up on the block. There's going to be no change in the week. The only chance for change is if the person that wins vetoes the target. If they don't veto the target, then it's the same. If they do veto the target, then it's the backup.
It removes choice, actually, right? Because you no longer have the choice to use the veto. You have to use it. And you no longer have the choice for some type of backdoor option. Oh, so
there are cookies, though.
Are there though?
Where are the cookies? I haven't seen any cookies yet.
The only thing that is like potentially good about this is like, and it's not even that good, but like someone having to choose between two people they're aligned with to use their veto on, and like the like potential drama that comes with that, where it's like, oh, they used it on this person and not me. And it's like, oh, you're going to stay still and you're safe. Like, and, but again, that's like, it doesn't provide that much entertainment. So I don't know.
Yeah. I like the idea purely because I'm sort of done with the back door. So it'd be nice to get rid of the back door, but I agree with Liana. It's at the expense of like getting rid of all the fun stuff that the veto provides. And it's not worth that trade-off from my perspective.
Yeah. I'm going to shred it.
Shredding it like Shredder. Yes. Taryn, do you have a nominations twist?
I have two that I didn't like.
All right, let's do it.
One of them was basically make it Big Brother Brazil, where Canada votes to evict. And I was like, nah. And then the other one was, what if we did BBUK style nominations, but still have a POV? I don't exactly know what BBUK style nominations are. I believe it's that everybody votes.
I thought that was the public voting.
Each person nominates two people.
Right.
And whoever gets the most nomination votes, the two people who get the most nomination, or whoever gets the most nomination votes are nominated. And sometimes with BBUK, it was like two people. Sometimes it was five people. Sometimes it was the whole house except for one or two people.
Yeah. I would not be a fan of that because of obvious reasons. This is a majority alliance, which is nominate all the people and then go home.
Yeah.
What if there was like five people on the block and there were like two vetoes and only four people could vote?
Supersized.
Huh. Well, I was going to say, Jenny, maybe you're onto something. This is like a third party candidate type situation. Okay. Like we're going to,
are we going to pull our votes together? Like, well, this person's going to vote for this random person and you need to make sure that you're not splitting the vote.
Yeah, but then it doesn't matter ultimately because the majority alliance is still going to be able to vote. So,
but what if like enough of the majority? What if there's enough people in danger and it's not two people on the block?
But how would that happen?
It's like a special week and there's a wheel that spins
randomly chosen.
Not randomly chosen. So there's an HOH. A wheel is spun. And it's like five nominees this week. And then you spin another wheel. Oh, three vetoes. And
so you have two wheels just with a bunch of numbers on them. And you just spin them.
Okay. Well, it could be the one wheel and you spin it once for one thing and then once for the other. We don't need to spend the whole budget on two wheels. Maybe put some of it into the prize. But so you could have a situation if the right person's in power, they can make sure that there's enough people.
Jenny, it's not enough wheels. More wheels. A wheel for number of HOHs. A wheel for hats.
For what competition the veto will be?
There's a wheel for which all other twists gets.
There's a wheel for what room you sleep in. It's the wheel for what type of speech you give.
What food they're going to end up having. More
the wheel
wheels.
For your who do you showmance? What's your catchphrase?
The wheel for who's in whose room. It's like a whole week of wheels.
Ooh, wheel week.
Wheel week.
A wheel for which wheel you spin.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, perfect, of course. Yeah.
I want wheels.
I love it.
We're breaking the wheel, yeah. We're breaking the wheel.
We're wheeling at Wendy's, guys.
Wheeling at Wendy's. Let's hashtag it.
I think people like doors. They like choosing which door. So you pick a door and then we see what wheels behind which door. I mean, obviously.
Okay. So there's a wheel behind the door.
Yeah, so there's doors, wheels.
Yeah, doors, wheels.
Maybe a Lazy Susan.
What else do game shows have? Like a big points board. Buzzers, more buzzers.
A briefcase? Yeah.
A briefcase. No, a box inside a briefcase.
Okay. On a wheel
that opens up to a key that takes you to a lockbox to a door, a tiny door like this big.
And then through that door is the original nomination wheel.
Okay,
mind blowing.
You gotta make it through there.
Wrap up the podcast. We
really gotta work for it. Okay, I like this.
All right, get on it, budget department.
All right, good job, guys.
Let's move on here. I want to take a step actually out of the usual weekly rotation. Speaking of wheels, so we had some suggestions for competitions, some more general new types of competitions that are separate from the typical HOH and veto. I like this one because we got the post-apocalyptic theming for Big Brother Canada 9. And this is a suggestion called the Big Brother Bunker, which operates like the safety suite, but the people who are immune for the week. So same thing like the safety suite, whoever wins and then they pick maybe one or two people to save. Those people, upon being safe, their punishment is that they have to move into a bunker and separate themselves from the house.
Wait, sorry, how do they get in the bunker again?
So it's like a separate room. You know, it's like how the safety suite was its own separate room. It's like, oh,
no, not like physically. How do they enter the bunker? It's of course by water slide,
a wheel, and
it's a door.
Door.
Which door do you pick?
There's a lockbox.
Wait, what was it? You lose a competition? What?
No, it's a safety suite.
If you win safety,
oh, you get to go just like live in the bunker.
So it's you're safe, but at the expense of now being physically removed from the house.
Gotcha. Okay, so
you're missing out on the strategy of the
like
week.
Ghost Island.
How long are you?
So they suggested right before the nominee speeches.
give their victory until speeches.
The whole week?
Yeah.
The whole next week?
That'd be a rough week.
Yeah, I shredded this one just because that I don't want, like, I don't want to lose someone for the week, and I don't want them to be out of the strategy for a week. Like,
I mean, I had a thought about, like, a physical, because, like, the one thing that Survivor has is that, like, you know, you can only, like, talk to people at certain times or see people at certain times because you're, like, when you're on two different tribes and you're living on different islands. And so, like, I was trying to think of, like, is there a way that you can, like, divide the house for, like, on a certain week for Big Brother where, like, you physically can't talk to certain people except for at, like, competitions? Is there anything that comes from that? But one person segregated for the whole week?
No, it'd be like 2 to 3 people. It'd be
two
like
to 3 people.
It'd be like, oh, Christmas wins the competition, selects Ian. Now Christmas and Ian are going to go into the BB bunker for the next few days.
Just feels like it's that it could be boring then, though.
Okay.
Like, what are they doing?
Yeah. So you're limiting the options of, like, who people can talk to that week. You're preventing, you know, potential underdogs from socializing and making new alliances with their safety.
And say it's only 2 or 3 people. Those people come out of that with, if they weren't already, with a giant target, because they're like, oh, they just spent a whole week with just each other, safe, bonding. Like,
that, is there a limit to how many times you can go in the bunker?
I'm assuming this would be like a safety suite where it's like you sign up for your bunker competition, you know?
Mm. Okay, so you can only do it once. I was going to say you just live in the bunker the whole time.
Yeah, you
can just,
if you're picked to be safe, though, like if you win one week and then someone picks you, like that's what happened with Christmas, right? Enzo picked her the very next week. You could be taking up residence in that bunker. If we shortened the time frame, if it was like until after the veto ceremony, would that help things at all?
So that they can't be...
So they're in there for like 3 days.
Oh, I see. Okay, so that they can't be nominated, right? Yep. They're like removed.
So once the nominees are set in stone, then they're there for the final like couple days of the week.
I mean, the thing is there's still so much strategy that happens during those specific days that the back half of the week is not as strategy heavy. So they're still going to miss the majority of it.
Which maybe is part of the point.
That's the risk reward, right? Like, you're guaranteed to be safe.
But you're going to have no impact on
I'm just thinking about, like, you know, Kacer wins safety suite week one, picks Janelle to be safe. And some of the best Kacer Janelle content we got all season was the immediate aftermath of that, aftermath of that, where they, like, we just saved our lives. Cody was coming after us. We need to talk to people. We need to form a counter alliance. If they were trapped in a bunker by themselves, it would have given Cody all the, he did it anyway, all the opportunity he needed to just like shut them down completely, give his own story about what happened. Like, and then they come back after 2 days or however long, and their energy isn't up as much. They've been out on all this talks and we miss all of the excitement of them just having won. I feel like this is the worst case scenario.
Okay, hear me out. I might have like a similar vein idea in terms of like isolating somebody. What if we go back to the idea of like giving some sort of reward to the surviving nominee, where every week, if you survive the block, you get to send one person into isolation. And it's like, getting like, and it's not necessarily the HOH that put you up. It might be somebody that you think is really key to the strategy. And it's like, if this person is out of the conversation for the week, I might have some leverage here. This is the only way I can see that maybe I don't mind somebody getting like sent away for a round.
I don't know about a whole week, but I could see
maybe a whole week, but for like part of the round or something.
Yeah, I could see like lock them away. Maybe they don't get to compete for the HOH.
That was the thing. Like, oh, you're all like, oh, blam, blam, blam. This person, Taryn was just evicted, but he's picked Liana to go into solitary confinement for 24 hours starting now.
Yeah. So you really have to manage that person on the block to make sure they don't choose you.
Right. So maybe they don't get to compete in HOH. Are they eligible to be nominated, or are they like immune from being nominated, but they can't come back out until after noms are set. So they have no ability to have input on who the noms are.
I think the latter. I think the person you're okay by a vote of whatever to whatever you have been evicted. All right. Come back from commercial before we play this HOH competition, the surviving block person, who would you like to send into the bunker?
And it could be strategic. It could be someone that you think is likely to win, or I don't know.
Yes. And then after the nomination ceremony, they open up the trap door and they're like,
with a giant beard.
Yeah.
Like Saddam Hussein.
That's a spider hole, Mike, not a bunker.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Maybe spider hole.
Like Nicole Franzel when she came out of the box in 18.
Yeah, the suitcases that were definitely there.
Yeah,
I actually really like that idea, because we definitely got a couple of recommendations for like the evictee leaving some sort of penance for someone, whether it's like picking someone to set out for the next HOH competition, giving someone like a penalty vote or something. I think this could be a fun way that, while not exactly minimal, it's not completely screwing someone over. And like you said, I think it gives people the opportunity to say like, well, things are so set in stone usually with Big Brother. If I know person A and B are nominated and person A is going, I better butter up person B, especially because I'm vote not exactly voting with them in the grand scheme of things, I do not want them picking me to send me to solitary confinement for 24 hours.
And you could be like scrappily just trying to, you know, get in somebody's ear without somebody else being able to like counter it. And, you know, it might not end up having any impact because they come back after noms are set and they end up having an impact on the second half of the week. So it doesn't completely screw them, but it might give that surviving person from the block a little something more to work with besides nothing.
Leslie in the chat says it could discourage potential flips because nobody would want to upset the person remaining on the block, which I do think is valid.
Yeah.
But I think what it could encourage is people trying to pretend that it wasn't them that flipped.
Right.
And you're going to get much more of Nicole Franzel's being like, oh, it was must
exactly.
have been David.
And lots of Fessy who flipped.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't me. I swear. I voted. You know, I voted for you. It could be interesting.
Mm-hmm. I think as long as we get feeds in the bunker, I'm cool with the modified version.
Mm-hmm. Definitely get feeds in the bunker.
I'm good. I'm good with sending this version to Wendy's, Jenny's version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think if you have to do isolation, I think this is the way to do it.
Yeah.
Agreed.
All right. I have one that I'm really excited about, actually. It's in the competition category. This one really intrigued me because I feel like this is something that could be very helpful to a lot of players. So each week, one house guest is either randomly chosen or maybe they win a competition and they go to the Big Brother Canada attic. Right now in this attic, they are going to get some very helpful tips about Big Brother, potentially an advantage. And they get these tips and advantages by talking to Boston Rob and Sandra about their game. And there's usually some kind of like theme to the advice. I think this is a really good idea.
Mm. All right. For your first one, you're going to make a fire in this house against me.
It'll definitely create the best season of Big Brother Canada.
Smarting
yet, right?
Up. Hey.
I mean, the infiltrate the HOH room, though, that one's going to slap, I promise.
So could we replace it, though? Is there like a bot? Whose statues would we make with Big Brother Canada? Ika and who else?
Kevin?
Kevin?
Together?
I don't think so.
Oh my God.
Or does it have to be two winners if it's going to be the Rob and Sandra? But I don't know.
I don't think it necessarily would have to be a winner. To me, I would imagine more like idols of the game. You know what I mean?
Right. Not, so what if we make it not here? two non-winners?
Oh, what
and
about,
it's like
what about,
Ika and Gary?
No, Ika and Anthony.
Oh, yes.
Oh, damn.
I love
you gotta
Anthony
be a lion.
So
yes.
No, you gotta be a queen.
Yes.
That's the thing, is that Rob and Sandra weren't exactly, you know, working the best together in terms of their own strategy. What do you think? So what kind of like competitions could they come up with? It'd be like, But it'd be interesting, right? Because, you know, the Island of the Idol sometimes said, did things like, okay, you have to make yourself become the caller of this next challenge. Would these almost be like a Team America task sometimes? Of, yeah. Okay, you have to get this person nominated. And if you do, you get an extra vote to use.
Yeah, you have to get this person thrown in the bunker. Like it all, addict to bunker, you know, I think it all just goes
together. We need
together. The bunker. Yes, the bunker you need now. To successfully put a plague upon the house. That's important.
Oh, I like this. Actually, can we get a rotating group then? So it's not just two people in the attic. We have a whole bevy of people. So like one time Pop and Paul Jackson shows up and says like, okay, and the next HOH is going to be endurance. You have to convince everybody to step down so that you win the HOH.
You know, it's funny that you suggest that because there was another suggestion that this one was a serious one though. Where a player comes in, like sort of like Dan Giesling did in Big Brother Canada 1, and they give some advice. They maybe live with the house guests for a while. And I think it's important to choose, like, you know, the villain, the strategic mastermind. And so Pop and Paul Jackson, I think, is a really great choice.
I'm here for anything that ends up having us. With Pop and Paul Jackson on our team. I like the idea. It's like the Wendy's, but like with an actual purpose.
Yeah.
And you know, there's like a theme for each person. It's like, yeah, this person, what, like this was their thing. And so their lesson is specific to whatever task they have you do. I don't hate that. I like that.
I was thinking, this is the twin twist. It's called Get Yourself Nominated. I don't know.
Your HOH. Great. Hey, we're Nick and Phil. You got to get yourself on that block.
Yeah.
Arissa asks, are you sure? You say, hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Oh, boy.
But yeah, it's one day maybe for like an all-star season. Here's another random competition one. This isn't exactly like a big old competition, but somebody asked if we could do more luxury challenges, basically in the style of Survivor Rewards, where a winner has to pick people to join them for a prize. And they feel like the micro social game related twists are far superior than macro advantages / power of the week. So what do we think? I know that BB Canada, I think more than BB US, does a good job of filling out that middle show, right? With like have not competitions and other things. What if we sort of eschew those more so in the favor of smaller prizes for like, hey, you get an Italian dinner in the backyard and you get to invite three people to come with you.
But Mike, they already invite somebody up for that Wendy's meal.
Which, oh yeah,
they tell us every single week that it's such an important part of the week, and it's definitely an important decision on who they bring up. And we also need to hear what they chose from the menu. So they are kind of doing this already.
This is one we have seen a few times already, especially back in the day with Big Brother US, but even recently they've done similar things. They've done similar things with Big Brother Canada. I feel like these are easy to do. There's no like harmful ramifications. I think these are certainly fine to do. I prefer like the things they used to do in the old seasons of Big Brother US, where it's more like, hey, like, you know, what offer will you take to, you know, will you put the rest of the house on peanut butter and jelly for $15,000?
Yeah, looking at you, Gene.
I like that sort of luxury challenge even more than this. But yeah, I think these are fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love stuff like this, because I think what's the downside? Okay, we get a boring segment, right? But the fact that people have to choose, like, again, the element of choice and the element of the social dynamics that go into those choices. So okay, yeah, sure, you're gonna get duds from here and there, but I think the fact that people are being put in that situation, and then if you go with the ones that Taryn suggested, that's on top of it, like even more exciting.
Well, I think what it will also help is how big the stakes of the prizes are. Like, with Survivor, oftentimes the make or break thing is the family visit, right? What if one week it's, okay, 30 minutes Skype from home, who are you picking? I think that could really piss some people off.
If you pull family into it of any, like that is going to increase the drama over food, because they're not starving in the Big Brother house. It's like different than on Survivor, where, you know, a food reward has more impact. But I think the, you know, segregation from your family is definitely going to have more impact here.
All right. let's move into the veto side of things. We have a lot of veto suggestions. Tara, did any catch your eye particularly?
I thought this one was interesting. So obviously in modern Big Brother Canada, they are not allowing the HOH to play in the veto. And this was just kind of a small twist to add on top of that, to add a little more choice to the equation. So the idea is that the HOH can choose to play in the veto, but if they lose and the veto is used, they do not have control over the replacement nominee. The veto winner does. So basically, if they sit out and they don't compete in the veto, then they guarantee that they choose the replacement nominee. But if they play and lose, the veto winner will end up choosing the replacement nominee.
Okay, so what's the upside of doing this? Because if let's say you, I think the risk is just, it's like, it's not worth it unless there, you need one of these two people to go home, like, for sure.
The
right?
risk is not worth it. The person that submitted this said the upside that they see is this could be great if there is a majority alliance led by brash alphas who think, no, I'm going to win this thing. I need to make sure that my target goes home. And they go in there and there's, you know, even if there's debate about, don't go in there, man. Oh, right. I can do this. you're putting us all at risk. No, I got this. it's just, it's another one. It just kind of provides an opportunity for people to screw up a little bit in some ways. But I agree. I don't think there's any actual incentive to do this. But again, like, it doesn't really harm anything if the HOH is already not playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another one that, like, in a very specific situation could be really awesome and entertaining, but how probable are we to get that specific situation is my criticism.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but then, you know, so what's the harm? You know, what's the harm in having it there if the majority of the time it's not going to be used, similar to the mutiny button? But I mean, the only thing I could think of is that I would be so sad of if, like, I don't know, the minority alliance finally won and then that's the brash person. Like, I really hope that it's the in charge alpha bros.
But then it's their own fault, you know, like they chose to take the risk and say, you know what? No, I'm going for it all. We see that on game shows all the time, right? Like, walk away or you can keep going for the big prize. And sometimes they fail when they go for that big prize.
No, I mean, deal.
Think about, like, your Pauly Califiores. Like, he absolutely, Pauly would jump into that veto competition, right? Like, every single time.
So funny.
Yeah. So we need more Paulys.
I genuinely see, like, very little harm to it if it were to be in there. Am I intrigued by it? No, not necessarily, but it's not. That's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, I think it also adds an interesting wrinkle to the HOH doesn't play in the veto thing, which I'm honestly still trying to wrap my head whether or not I like it. Mm-hmm. I know that we've really only seen one season of it because season 8 doesn't really count. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming it's going to carry over into this season. I think I just need to see a larger sample size to figure out if I like the idea of the HOH not playing in the veto. And if that continues to be the case, this can at least be an interesting wrinkle of, okay, you can choose to break that convention, but in exchange for it, you run the risk of possibly derailing your HOH as a result.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd send it to Wendy's. Yeah.
There's no harm.
It's fine. It's fine. No, I'm going to shred it. Nah, it's boring. I'm bored.
I mean, again,
I'm bored.
You'll notice any twist that I thought was, like, even moderately worth considering is one that just, as long as it doesn't break the game, I'm down. Just don't break the game. Let's see. It's that easy.
Well, here's one that Kyle Crank set in, and it's a little bit like a take on a power, but a veto-esque power, the POV pass, where basically everyone gets given one at the start of a season. When you play your POV pass, which you can only do once, you can play in a POV competition that you weren't selected for. Mm-hmm. So essentially, it boxes out this idea of, like, the six-finger plan. Oh, the random draw doesn't go your way. You can say, like, ha ha ha. Well, still, I'm going to play this because I feel like my life's on the line. You can only play it once. You can't play it on someone else. So it's your choice as to whether or not you want to use your one POV pass.
I don't think it really harms anything.
Yeah, I think the danger is, you know, how long does it go for?
I think they said, final seven.
Right. So if it only goes to final seven, then there's not a lot of incentive to hold it for the late game, which means that, you know, the majority could stack a veto competition to make sure that a specific target goes out. Right. And you know, the majority will have more passes than the minority will. Right.
What if it's like there's a limit to how many people can play their pass in a week and you have to like make a decision by a certain time, like similar to like the safety suite where like there's a time limit.
A time frame of, okay, swipe your POV pass if you want to play in this week's POV competition.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, from a logistics perspective also from the crew, like then they would only have to have one extra lane or whatever, right? They're not going to have to be like,
they know ahead of time. Yeah. Like they know, and they probably have to, they might have to, I don't know. Shortly after the veto draw, there's maybe like a 20 minute period or maybe even shorter where you have to make the decision if you, and there's only three slots or whatever. So if it was originally six people played, then it can be up to nine. And then that way the crew knows how many people to play.
They could
for.
Also just replace the people that would have been picked, right?
Oh, that's like one of the random draws. Yeah, yeah, sure. It's replaced and that way you don't. Oh, yeah, you could do that
too. For every person that decides that is an interesting to use their idea. Pass, yeah. You don't pick somebody.
So then it has to be, so three max could do it to replace the three people that are selected by random draw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So they swap them out.
So it's essentially the ring of replacement.
Right.
Just not declaratively like, oh, I'm choosing to use this. I like that. I think that could be, it's something that I think is innocuous enough, but given the right person or the right moment could be fun to use as someone who's like, oh, no. I think like I could very much see a Danny Briones, right? Like using it in week five or something to be like, something is not right. I'm going to use this now. So I'm guaranteed to play in the POV no matter what. That sends up signals to her alliance members of why does she not feel safe? Yeah. You know, what is that about? I think that it has some potential here for drama.
Yeah.
And like the limit can hopefully prevent it from like what Taryn was saying about a majority of alliance, just making sure that one of them is going to win by probability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Sure. It's fine. I mean, with the limit, right? The number of people, I think that would be the way I would accept this.
Yeah.
I think and the time limit to put it in too. So there was like a split decision.
It would definitely discourage backdoor plans, and it would probably hurt the people that are like number two, number three on the target list, and help people that are closer to number one on the target list. Which
not against that. Yeah,
it's not always a bad thing. It's like,
someone in the minority might still go home, but this will just be the person who would go home next week. So
it shakes things up.
And that's not a terrible thing because again, like anything to like give them a little kickstart in the game. Right. Like, being the number two or three target is not a good place to be, especially when people can play in the veto when they want.
If there's gonna be like a slow or predictable week, I'd at least take. Thinking for the first half of the week that it's going to be this person, and then it ends up being another person for the second half of the week. At least then that's something different than just watching someone walk to their death.
Walking the plank?
Yeah.
Okay. Arr. Arr. I also did see something where someone set up a twist where the veto players, so the veto players are actually chosen, like, you know, back in Big Brother 4, Big Brother 5, the people are explicitly picked to compete in the veto competition, but the veto players are the only ones who are eligible to be renominated.
Picked by whom?
It could be the HOH and the two nominees would pick them.
Like house guest choice?
Yeah, so it's just like what they did back in the original days, right? It was that the HOH picked someone, the nominee, then the two nominees each picked a person. And then of those six people, if somebody wins the veto and chooses to use it, those three people are the only ones who are eligible to be renominated.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of issues with this one. One is that if the HOH gets to choose a person to play in the veto, then they're just going to choose their third person for sure, and then maybe you have a situation where like, oh, if that person wins veto, then you know the other two can name the other two people. I think that does add something, But what it probably does is it means, okay, so you put a pawn, then that pawn chooses a person from the other side. And then you just have to make sure that you have enough, the right number of people in the group, right? In the group of people to be nominated. So it's not, I don't think it's super hard to game. And then the other thing is that if it is gamed properly, we're again losing that, like, anything can happen, anybody can go. Once those people are chosen, those six people, the rest of the house, whew, don't need to worry at all. Easy pickings. No, I don't have to suck up to the HOH. I don't need to worry about my safety. We're all good.
I would love to, like, sit down and do the math of like, essentially the numbers of people, like, within that group of six, right? So, okay, so, like, let's say you do nominate a pawn as the HOH. Okay, now you have, like, side A, B, side B. Okay, so now I've got two from A, but the A is always going to pick a B, and that, you know, so I think that would be interesting to run through that. Although I do feel like from a television perspective and from a feeds perspective that limiting it to the only six, then, like you said, does sort of create a dead half of the week. Once right. you have that, once those players are chosen, then it's like, okay, they already would have run through the scenarios, I would hope, beforehand. So then it just comes down to, okay, who wins the veto? But they usually do that anyway. So yeah, I don't know. And I mean, it's interesting to think about.
Worst case scenario, it's just, it's one person ends up on the block that's from your alliance and you just don't vote them out. And as opposed to what we talked about before, where it's like, oh, well, you might intentionally put somebody on the block so that if they survive, they get a power. This is not intentionally, it would not be intentionally done by the HOH. It would be the minority that put that person there. So there's no sort of hard feelings. There's no, you know, nothing to cause any strife in the majority. And that's if it's done correctly.
That's if it's done correctly. Yeah. Exactly.
Not enough skills in the house to play that out.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's pulling a Liana and is like sitting there trying to think, okay, if I put up one person from this side, it's most likely going to be...
Yeah,
you do the math.
Liana's like, oh, I love the math of it. And I'm like, ow, my brain.
Yeah, when a lot of Big Brother house guests, the only counting they do is via Instagram followers. I don't think there's really any complex math being done on any of this. Taryn, did you have any other veto ideas or should we move on?
We can move on from the veto.
All right, let's talk about power, because we have a lot of power suggestions that have been thrown out here. So here's an interesting one that sort of goes back to the idea of everybody gets something. It's a concept called BB Lifelines. And so production would choose, I guess, in the style of the ever popular show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. There's like three powers that each house guest is in their disposal. Let's say maybe like an extra vote or a vote nullifier or maybe one of those POV passes. They can only use one and only one of those lifelines. And that's going to last until like maybe final seven or final six. And so basically it's like, OK, I have three powers I could possibly choose from. And it adds a double layer of choice of I have to pick which one I want to use and when I want to use it as well.
Are the powers phone a friend, ask the audience in 50-50?
Yes. So it's going to be phone a friend. You phone someone else in the house and they have to tell you the truth. Ask the audience. You talk to Twitter and they tell you who you're supposed to vote for.
Oh, boy.
50, oh, my God.
50-50. You can only nominate half the house guests.
Wow, what a power.
What a power.
Yeah. I think powers are super dangerous to put into the game because it's, again, you have to look at majority versus minority. If everyone has one power, then the majority will have more powers than the minority. The other. And that gives them extra tools to keep the minority down. So I think that's what you really have to worry about.
They could sweeten the deal for me by having the lights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that being
and a
said,
wheel.
And a wheel, obviously a wheel.
For fun.
The ask the audience would be interesting. I mean, I'm intrigued. I love the concept. But I do think that... I think that the powers go to the majority. I think they end up having more. And then I don't know what the ask the audience would tell them. I guess you could screw over the you know, the majority alliance, like that one could be potentially interesting. Still don't quite understand 50-50, but yeah, I'm intrigued. Like, it piques my interest for sure.
Yeah.
Wait, so the powers are not actually Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
No, they're not actually. It's on a different network. They wouldn't even let us do it.
That's not what I was told.
I'm not agreeing to it. If it doesn't have that branding.
I believe in the suggestion. The suggestions are like something like automatically play in veto, steal 1 to 2 votes, advantage in the HOH competition. They said like maybe 2 before jury, then 1 after jury, or like give safety to another house guests. So things like that. But
No.
Could we go back to our evergreen surviving nominee idea, and the person who survives the week gets one of these lifelines?
That was actually,
and I love that's fine. Choice.
Yeah, that was actually exactly what I like. Well, this is one of the twists that I was thinking of when I said that, where a way to give powers to players, I think, is by giving it to the surviving nominee. And so I think that could potentially work, because otherwise, again, like the minority is going to have to use all of their powers immediately to stay alive. They'll still go out and then the majority will have all the powers and the majority.
And I like the idea of them having a choice as well, even though I'm someone that I get overwhelmed by choices, but because certain things might not be that valuable to you depending on where you are in the house. If you know for a fact that you're probably going right back on the block the next week and you're going out if you don't win veto, maybe having the veto pass is your best opportunity, because you might not get pulled for the veto and you want to make sure that you're at least in the running to play veto. Whereas like having an extra vote might not do anything for you because there's so many other votes against you. At least giving them options so that you're not just giving them something useless. So they're like, oh, cool, an extra vote. That's going to help me when I have 8 people against me.
Right. But and also could be a thing of, well, I know I'm good in competition, so an advantage in the HOH competition would be particularly great. Or I'm a better social player, so maybe a 1 to 2 vote nullifier would actually be a great, you know, safety cushion to possibly get me through a very tight vote. I think having the ability to choose within the twists also very much helps. You know, as much fun as the power apps and the temptation stuff was, I think had these people been given a, I was going to say that they were given the choice, but no, they had to poke which app looked the most fun, and then they were given a power.
Yeah, based on pictures.
So I have a branding idea for this. So the surviving nominee gets to visit the Tickle Trunk, which is there's a Canadian Mr. Rogers was Mr. Dress Up, and he had something called the Tickle Trunk, and there was all sorts of fun and games and mystery in there.
I'm just gonna pre-disavow this just in case.
Why? It's a pure thing, Taryn. Don't make it weird.
The Tickle Trunk.
Could you just imagine the announcer?
Canadians in the
you're
chat,
gonna announce the Tickle Trunk
out
on Big Brother. And you're going to say, this is totally pure, guys. There's nothing wrong with the Tickle Trunk. Why are you guys thinking it's weird?
Okay, it's his thing. It's an homage to Mr. Dress Up. It's purely Canadian. I love it.
So then with this guy, would Mr. Dress Up be in the Tickle Trunk?
No.
You're like, you won an extra vote. I don't know how Mr. Dress-Up talks. I'm assuming
I've got
like
some tickles for you.
It's just the name of the trunk, guys.
Wage advantage, but you're going to have to tickle me if you want it.
Mike!
I do love to get tickled.
No.
No!
You're upsetting Canadians everywhere. I'm hurt.
It's okay, Jenny.
It's a lovely thing. The Tickle Trunk is full of wonderful things that brings joy to everyone's life.
Jenny,
and
I think we need to talk after the show. I think there might be some things you need to work through.
Show me on the puppet where he tickled you. Look, it's okay, Jenny. I got your back. When they tear apart Heritage Moments, I'll also be there. It's fine.
Also, we already have a Mr. Dress Up, and his name is Derek from BB Can 6. Never forget his strawberry tuxedo.
All right. All right. So we've approved it. Excellent.
Isn't Derek already returning? And then Kyle or something.
All right, true. He's doing his own. He's doing an undercover Jace, right? He's coming in under the name Kyle. And so I think we could send the modified version of BB Lifelines / Tickle Trunk to Wendy's.
Everyone get the Tickle Trunk for.
You don't get in the Tickle Trunk. Okay, you choose your power.
I have to do it. 100% Wendy's, because I want to hear Taryn talk about this every single week. Like, it has to be done. Lock it up.
So this week, I'm thinking I'm really in danger this week. I think I have to go into the Tickle Trunk. I think I need to make this call.
Yeah, you know what? I'm feeling in trouble. Your boy's feeling ticklish. Hey, Mr. Dressed Up. So I walk into the Tickle Trunk.
I'm telling you, it's gold.
Oh, man. Yes. So my goal this week is, because I want the Tickle Trunk all to myself next week, so I'm going to try and trick people into the Tickle Trunk this week.
Oh, the Trickle Trunk.
The Trickle Tunk.
That's a totally different
thing. That one has bad powers. Yes, only negative things.
Tickle Trunk Twist has a great ring to it.
Yeah, and then the Trickle Trunk is Mr. Dressed Down, and he gives you penalties.
Bad, yeah, exactly. The punishments, okay? Oh, okay. Not those types of punishments.
Y'all need Jesus.
Yeah. Y'all need Mr. Dress Up, okay?
Yes, you do.
Oh my god. Oh, this is so good. Tara, do you have any other powers that stick out to you?
Okay, so there's one that is different sort of token ideas. There's one where there's like fire tokens, but for Big Brother. But there's another one that's a little bit more like Garnet's from the Genius for Big Brother, where like each player starts with a certain amount of tokens at the start of the season. So let's say if the prize money is $100,000, then they've got like 10 tokens worth $10,000 each or something along those lines. And then you can kind of bargain away your own prize money throughout the game, either for advantages in the game or prizes, or just like trading with other players for them to do something for you. So I think that this is something that they've kind of played with in the past in various ways, but I think this is a very successful idea from the Genius that works very well, and I think it could be interesting to try it with Big Brother.
So they're gambling their stipend?
The potential prize money. So
it's sort of like if you saw this, I was stranded with $1 million. The onus was essentially like a bunch of people were stranded with a prize pool of $1 million, and progressively they could spend money from the prize pool to get things to sort of help them along in the competition. I've always loved this idea of like, you know, essentially spend or save. Are you going to try to use money now at the expense of winning more money down the line? It does get a little touchy with BB Can specifically, because I know that it's not exactly all monetary. A lot of it is prize packages.
Mm-hmm. You're gambling like a barbecue.
You can't gamble away the car or anything.
No, but I think this is a very fun idea, and I think this is not exactly going to incentivize a majority, because if they're like, all right, we're all gonna buy an advantage, someone's like, no, I don't want to pay $10,000 to contribute 1/8 to boxing someone out this week. Yeah. That doesn't feel beneficial to me.
It encourages,
it only impacts their prize,
their
if they
prize
get it.
It encourages the majority to hoard, because they think, oh, I'm gonna get to the end, I'm gonna win, I don't need to spend my money. And the minority are the only ones that are going to be willing to spend part of their prize money to get advantages. I think the only downside here is that, what happens if somebody spends all of their prize money? Maybe you limit it to like up to half or something along those lines.
Yeah, there has to be a limit.
I don't know how much of this it would impact it, but like, I think there is an element from the audience that like would be like a little bit disappointed if somebody won and then only won like half the amount of money they would have won otherwise.
Here's your $2,000 and a car.
But they traded it for several quarter pounders along the way. So like, here we are. Yeah, I know. I love the concept of the bargaining and the trading. And do you trade it with other players? Do you bargain for, you know, votes in the game, or do you go just for the advantages? I think we really have to narrow down that advantage menu. Like, I think we need to be choosy about exactly what they could, you know, order, buy, whatever. But again, as a concept of having the ability to use and have more choices about what you do with these pieces, I think it's super, super interesting. And it would just be hilarious also to hear people swapping their prizes. Like, I'm definitely down for those conversations, even if they have no game relevance.
Yeah. I think in addition to this, I that could be interesting if they were willing to do this is potentially you can add to your prize money up to a certain amount where you are then incentivized to try to get the tokens from other people. And that, I think, one of the best ways to get a majority alliance or a power structure to fail is by making the people at the top get too greedy. And so if they think like, if I can just get these tokens from them, then I'm going to win $150,000 instead of just 100. And now they're making mistakes because they're trying to get those extra tokens. And then you'd have to do something where, like, you can't just give someone your tokens on the way out the door.
Well, I was going to say, do you similar to fire tokens, do eliminated house guests will the tokens to someone still left in the game?
I would say there's a deadline to if you're on the block, there's a deadline to giving away your tokens. Like, maybe
so
even
it has to be before you go.
Yeah. Or maybe like even before the veto. Right. Where it's like, if you want to give your tokens away, like all of them away, you have to give them away before you're sure that you're going home.
Interesting.
Otherwise, because you don't want to just dump tokens on people, right? But if somebody's like, I'm not looking great this week. Here's my tokens. Then they survive. If they give them to somebody that's still in the game, then they can just get them back theoretically, as long as they're willing to give them back. But if they give them to the other person on the block, then that person gets voted out and you've lost everything. Yeah. So you have to be a little careful.
Let me use the proper terminology here. Bequeathed. I'm so sorry.
Yes. I feel like such an idiot.
There is this interesting idea, though, that goes back to, I think Corey had this as one of the BB care packages, right? Was he had an extra amount of money that he could use to essentially bribe someone. And I do think there's a very fun facet of that, too, right? Hey, I'm going to give you this token if you vote for me to stay. And someone could take it and easily vote you out if they decide to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a lot to the fire tokens of Survivor that I would love to see something similar in BB, some sort of currency. And it's always fun to see people collaborating on something. I don't know that if you're on the block, if you have to make the decision before you go, that people are going to risk it.
I don't want people I think ideally we're trying to not let people just
want them to not get
give
rid
it all
of them.
Away because mm-hmm. We don't want people with an overabundance of them all
right.
of a sudden.
Like yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think especially if they have to physically carry around all of their tokens, and ideally it's in higher quantities than the fire tokens on Survivor. So then like there's a physical representation, like, this guy got a bag of money. Like, what are we going to do with all
this tokens? This goes back to our Survivor B&B coverage when Liana was mistakenly under the assumption that people would get hundreds of fire tokens over the course of the season.
I did expect there to be lots of tokens. Okay, so as long as there's lots of these, like whatever it is, because I think that also like represents something, because you see a representation of power. And like, I think that is something that could be super cool. I mean, not that anybody's going to overtly be talking about it, but could it be subconscious?
How about this? Stealing is allowed. So you need to protect, physically protect your fire token or your money token.
Straight from South Africa Survivor Season 5. There's a lot of controversy there. What about, to Liana's point, the idea of like, what if there is, much like the stock market, a big board or even like the screen in the living room has the current count of tokens on it each and every day, so you can figure out like
I love visuals.
Oh my god, no, this is a GameStop situation, guys. Don't worry, you've got it on lock. My other idea was, of course, a betting gambling element with a wheel. We all know we love wheels.
We love wheels.
Something like that as well. I'm just kidding. But yeah, no, seriously, I actually really, really like this idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this could be a very fun idea. I think it's surprising that we haven't seen a lot of it. It's what it was that and the golden bricks from season 10 that were used. Mm-hmm. Those are really like the only ones that I can really think of. But I think if they have the ability to, I think being able to make negotiations without just using their word, yes. You know, when people use things as collateral, I think it's often a lot of fun because there's only so much you can depend on in this type of game without cold, hard cash in your hands.
BB Spicoli in the chat pointing out a great example of something that could occur. You wake up and realize you've lost all your tickle tokens.
Oh no.
I've not robbed. My tickle tokens.
Oh no.
Here's the thing about the stealing too, is that if you win HOH, you get like a safe to keep your tokens in, your tickle tokens,
ooh,
right?
Ooh, okay.
So extra benefit. Everyone else has to like keep them safe. Like sleep with them, you know, you gotta, or maybe if you trust the HOH, maybe you can give your tokens to the HOH to keep in there safe, but they are in mm-hmm. possession of them when you do that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Something
slowly
that
this will become Pirate Master.
Exactly. let's plunder some more booty here, because something that I wanted to bring up, which is sort of like
in the tickle trunk or no?
Oh my god.
Listen, we don't want to impugn the tickle trunk here. We are supportive Americans.
I wish I could leave the tickle trunk alone.
But something that sort of ties into the veto is should we do more of what Allison got to do in BB Can 2? Mm-hmm. Should we do more hidden vetoes? And I know that one thing was suggested was like hidden powers or advantages or vetoes, for example, in challenges in plain sight. Mm-hmm. You know, could there be like a veto in a topiary in a maze challenge? And if someone's observant enough or has the information beforehand to grab it, then they're granted an extra veto for the week.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the obviously the immediate thing I think of is Survivor, right, with the hidden immunity idols. So this would be like a full out veto, like an extra veto.
Could be a veto because we saw that in BB14, right? Like there was the claw machine. Mm. Could be any of those powers we listed before as well. This could be also a thing of like, hey, if you're the surviving nominee, you're given a clue as to where an advantage is hidden. Right? Because again, Allison was not given a veto. She was instead said, okay, this is where it is. You have to follow these set of clues. William as well, I think, got a secret one in Canada 5 too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing I remember is William just like crouching down, because didn't he have to like go in like a short, well, like a small room?
Yeah, a little passage.
That one was not
that's
in
literally
plain sight.
All I remember.
That was a whole thing. That was I like the plain sight idea.
Yeah, because that sort of is like the Survivor China thing, right? Of what if much like Bobby Halad tried in Big Brother Canada 3, it was like part of the house.
Yeah.
And so if somebody takes it down, it's like, is that thing gone? Either there's a competition happening or that could be a veto. That could raise some interesting paranoia.
The Adam Klein. here's the ultimate power, right? Somebody gets evicted, they walk out of the house, they sit next to her, to Arissa, and then they look at her microphone and there's a V on it. Just a V on the microphone. Mm-hmm. And if they grab the microphone from Arissa, they get back into the house. That's a secret power.
So you'd like to play my microphone?
I'm hoping this will work.
Always.
I need to bring Arissa back into the house with the microphone.
They can call it the Adam Klein twist.
What I like about this is that it's not something that is ingrained in the show right now. So like the thing with like immunity idols is people know in Survivor, people know they're there, so they're constantly looking. So with this being like a newer thing, like it's been kind of dabbled with here and there, hidden things, but like it's not like a, you know, constant thing in the game. So I think that like, you know, people are in the house constantly just looking at stuff. And I do like the idea of, you know, just having, you know, being a very perceptive person or just noticing details ending up being rewarded. If they're going to do something random like that, why not? People aren't going to be going in like, you know, flipping beds over on the first day trying to find something because they know it's part of the game because it always is.
No, usually so you just do it for hide and go veto.
Right.
Yeah. And the other thing is that it's less surreptitious than Survivor, right? In Survivor, yeah. You can't be like, wait a minute, that tree looked different yesterday. I think there is an interesting idea to having to find this stuff within the confines of a house where other people live. You can mm-hmm. only be so sneaky in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the thing is I feel like I remember Devon counting things and looking for things. And then, nothing really ever came of that. And I feel like let's reward the people who know that this is a thing and would be willing to look for it. So I'm all for a treasure hunt.
Yeah, the most egregious example is when Kevin Martin found the have not twists and then wasn't allowed to have it. And instead they gave it to Sarah Brittany.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. So great. I think we'd have to decide on what the power is, but I think it's worth some Wendy's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd take it there.
All right. Anything else, Taryn, or should we go elsewhere?
Let's go elsewhere.
All right. So there is a couple things I want to bring up from Canada's vote before we get into the eviction. Here's an idea. So obviously there's a lot to talk about with popularity of contestants. I don't think any of the four of us are necessarily fans of Canada's vote determining anything. But if there was some sort of, again, like a ticker or a ranking on the screen that would tell you, you know, quote unquote, fan popularity, would that be too much messing with the game? Would that stir up enough drama to cause different things to happen?
So it's telling the Joker's ratings, posted live.
There's the memory wall, and then there's the stock watch on top of it.
The stock watch.
Yeah.
No, the problem is that, maybe the stock watch, that would be hilarious.
I think that's what we do.
With Joker, the problem with Jokers is that it's going to be the minority people who are on top, and then the majority is going to be like, oh, okay, good, more reason to get rid of them.
Right.
Unless I want to be the favorite. Is there a reason why people like them? Something must be up.
This was my highest rated Canada vote twist, which says a lot about Canada vote twist.
Yeah, it's bad.
But you know what? Like, it doesn't have that much impact on the game, right? Like, it certainly will hurt. Like, I think the key here is that everybody knows that it's there.
Right.
Consistently. Mm-hmm. It's not like, like Cindy hearing boos, a week before and then cheers when she makes a move. Right. It's like, no, this is there and you have time to like, okay, the audience doesn't like what I'm doing. What do I do about that? How do I manage my relationships with other people in the house who might be sensitive to what the audience thinks? How do I convince them to disregard the audience? Overall, I feel like it's one of these things that like people will be more happy with the idea of it than the implementation of it.
This reminds me of that Black Mirror episode, which is funny because we're talking about Big Brother and I'm like, no, not that, where that's the ratings, right? Like you can
nosedive
people. Nosedive. Yeah, exactly. That's what it makes me think of. I don't know if it would make people play scared. I don't know if it would cause part of me like wants to see the disaster that it could possibly create. But I also don't want to risk a whole Big Brother season. Like we only get two a year, you know, for Canada and US. Like, no, I don't want to throw it in there because they could potentially screw it up. So I would just be scared for it.
Should we institute meow meow beans into Big Brother Canada?
Oh, my God. Of all the things we could pick, yes, that's fine.
It is kind of interesting though when you have that moment of someone who thinks that they're like really beloved and they realize they're like, oh, we're the ones that everyone's rooting against. Mm-hmm. So we get those moments and does it change people's games? Or does it just make people miserable is the question. You know what I mean?
It is interesting going back to like the care packages, right? When there was all that weird stuff where like Paul and Victor didn't win anything and they said, okay, wait, are we not popular? How does that inform things? I do think there is something that might subliminally inform a person's gameplay, whether or not they believe that they're liked or not. But I think it's only to a certain extent. So I don't think mm-hmm. it's exactly game tampering. I mean, we've seen this before, right? I mean, I know Adele in Big Brother Canada too. Didn't he win some sort of popular vote prize and got to sort of get a sense as to who people liked and who didn't like? So it's not like the show is beyond necessarily letting people in on who exactly the popular people are in the game at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. What if like only, what if it's like, one person gets, or like, or just the HOH gets to see like the ranking that week and they can't like share the information with anyone.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know. It's so like a, it's a special perk of like their HOH week. It's kind of like on the challenge where like they get to see the votes.
Yeah.
So they, you know, they get to see a screen for a very limited time to see what the rankings are at that point.
I feel like I like that less because that is more similar to like Cindy hearing the crowd cheering. And like, there's little that you can do to counteract that as a player because you can't even know that it's, you know what I mean?
Especially if they can't talk about it, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, Canada votes in general is like,
Yeah. There's like not really many situations I think that it works out.
The only other one was like the Wheel of Punishment. We're essentially
Wheel.
Yeah, but we're essentially like Canada votes for one person to spin a wheel and get a punishment.
Yeah, and like every option is the tickle trunk.
Yeah,
the tickle trunk is not a punishment, Taryn.
But it is. But I think it's you know, it's similar to like America's Field Trip, right? Of okay, this is a way to dunk on people. So I don't know. It's fine. I would rather have something not that doesn't bring in powers, like just a leaderboard, than okay, because you were voted for this, now you're getting this. Even when that happened, because the problem with Canada's vote twists are that essentially it's all determined by the edit. I think as live feeders, we only control so much power as has been exhibited over the course of 8 seasons of Big Brother Canada.
Oh my gosh, like that week that Ryan got saved.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The week that Ryan got saved. Or even look at like the first the Den of Temptation or BB20, right? It was always the people who were getting the positive powers were always the ones who were like most prominent in the edit. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the problem, is that it really does come down to, okay, Canada, you're voting based on this product that we have manipulated and put in front of you. It has a big impact on the game, but we packaged it in a certain way to dissuade your viewing. I think if you're going to make them vote for the most innocuous things possible.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. But then it's like, I don't care. Like, why do it at all?
Well, but let's move into eviction night. Taryn, were there any eviction twists that popped your eye?
Popped his eye.
Ew.
Yeah.
Popped your eye out of its socket.
I mean, there were some.
Eye patch. Okay, back to pirates.
there was one, just another one where
eye popping, eye catching.
Yeah.
What's the thing?
Eye popping.
Is something that caught
your eye? Because it popped out of your head.
It's like
that's where the phrase comes from.
All right, sorry, Tara. I was just processing.
You might say that you popped your eye on that one.
I popped my brain on that one.
Yeah. there's one that just was a simple, if you aren't voted out, if you survive the block, then you're safe the next week.
So that's like very similar to going back to the challenge. There was one season where, like, if you won the elimination, you got a relic, which meant you were safe the next week. I think that's probably the simplest way to do like a, I think that could especially work pre-jury of a, oh, if you're nominated, you don't get nominated the next week. Could be if they want to go Occam's razor and still incentivize someone who survives the block, that could be a way to do it. Not as fun as the pieces of veto or tickle trunk of lifelines, but I think still a good way.
Mm-hmm. Then there was another one. It was another three nominee one, but this one had a slight twist here. It's that the house guests will vote to save one person every week. And then the other two will have to compete in a competition, the loser of which is evicted. And the winner gets to stay in the game. So this very dramatically changes the sort of nature of the game, where it's a lot more like if you've seen Sequester or even The Genius to some degree. The vote is not the ultimate decider. It is more about the competition. And I think that it's, while it's interesting,
it's,
I think
the game,
the problem Burn is that it. It's not Big Brother.
It's not the game.
And
I don't want to see people leaving because they lost a comp when they were going to stay otherwise. I mean,
it's basically saying, like, let's take Final Four fire making and Survivor and
every round,
you know?
Yeah. And one of the problems that games like Sequester have is that if you have a way to, like, a one-on-one situation, you're trying to get out a comp beast and then they just win and then they win again.
Yeah.
And then when again, like, it starts to become Groundhog Day where they just keep trying and trying and trying to get that person out. And every single week is the same.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hate it. I hate it.
Let me tell you, these are my top three eviction.
Darren, I'm not shocked.
This one was no week one eviction.
I like this one.
Yes.
Okay.
No week one eviction. The first week, there's no HOH, no nominations, no veto, no eviction. It just allows the house guests to sort of like get to know each other. And there's no immediate HOH. And so I thought this one was interesting. Basically, instead of like immediate HOH,
yeah,
2 weeks, wait a week, then have HOH. And that could allow more natural bonds to form and doesn't give such an advantage to the that first HOH.
I love this, actually, because I mean, like, the opposite of this is when we have like someone going out like night one,
yeah,
which
this
we
is
hate.
The anti Cameron.
Exactly. Or Jody. Yeah, I think that without anyone even being in power, instead of just like a super long HOH reign, you're having everyone just get to know each other under no circumstances of who has power. And honestly, sometimes the person you or the people you like the most in the first couple of days aren't the people that you end up liking as much in like a week's time. And so you definitely could see some dynamics change if everyone's on the same level playing field and they don't know what, you know, who's going to be in power and who they need to be really like working with. Mm-hmm. So I really like this, actually, if there's going to be an eviction twist.
Well, and the thing is, too, is that that first week is longer and the HOH is in power for longer, which gives them more time to cultivate those relationships and to sort of build that. So if that also is taken away, so like, let's say you have no week one HOH, you have this long time for people to build relationships. And then the first HOH is much shorter. It's the regular schedule. Yeah. So I like it for that reason as well.
Yeah, and the other thing that they might have suggested was if you have to have a certain number of weeks, once you're done with the week one, no eviction, follow it up with a double eviction week two, mm-hmm. where essentially now it's like, you didn't need to do anything for the first week, but now we're going hard. Now you better hope you've cemented something because now the game gets started really, really quickly.
I don't mind that too, especially if, you know, because you don't want it to be dragging too much. So, you know, once the first week has happened, then like maybe accelerate it a little bit. Yeah. And really test where people are after only one vote.
Hmm. Yeah, I think this is a really great idea. I think, you know, say what you want to about things like Big Brother 2, where it might be a bit slower with no veto or anything. But I like those opportunities to have people really intermingle. You could throw in things like rewards or secret tasks. Big Brother certainly does not shy away from them to fill out the time. You don't necessarily need an anchor competition every week. And even if you do, you can do things like have-nots, luxury, etc. But I do think not necessarily forcing people to shoot from the hip so quickly, I think, ironically enough, will produce more exciting gameplay long-term than essentially telling people make a decision right now, which oftentimes then forces them into these groups that they huddle in for a good portion of time.
Yeah, sure. I do think the danger here is that the first couple weeks are often some of the most exciting, and part of the reason is because people are forced to immediately group up and then have to break those groups because they didn't work out the way they thought they would. And if you give them more time, they'll probably be better at picking the groups that they ultimately form. And they'll be less likely to split up once they do. But, you know, can't always win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like this. I'll take this to Wendy's.
Yeah. Especially of all of them, right? Like, this would be the one that I would probably pick.
Yeah, definitely.
Here's a couple of fluffier ones. One person wrote, thanks to the new TikTok sponsorship, 1 week the nominees on the block will each post a TikTok, and whoever gets more likes on their TikTok stays, and the other person goes. What do you think? What do you think about
it's two Canada votes
for the likes?
It might as well just be a Canada. Yeah,
nobody will care what the TikTok is.
Yeah.
It won't matter at all.
But they have to. Do they get extra points if they do challenges while they like a TikTok dance while they're trying to tell people, please vote for me. I want to stay and help my family.
Yeah. Instead, so the TikToks that they published for the cast were like them just like pointing at like, I'm 23. I'm this tall.
But every instead, TikTok I hate.
Right. Instead, it would be like, please, I need your help. Please vote for me. I really need
Canada's
the money.
Hero.
Oh my gosh. I would love to see what challenges different people would pick, you know, how much editing are they allowed to do?
I want to stay, and so I'm gonna drink a gallon of milk right now.
Oh my god.
I'm gonna do the vitamin challenge in the hopes that you vote for me.
Is this what you want? You want good TV?
Exactly. Who's going to Sabrina the most? The other fun one that was suggested was production allows everyone on the cast to bring one pet onto the season, and there are two evictions every week. Once for a pet, once for a person.
No! Aww. That is terrible!
I think
this person? It's dark-hearted.
Okay, so obviously, yes, of course, bring the pet, because as the proponent of like when people get voted out, you should put a Labrador Retriever in the house in their stead. I would love the addition of animals. It would create complete chaos. Stay. However, I can't imagine watching feeds and then all of a sudden there's a bird in the background.
Well, you've already seen that with the puppies and the kittens, right? Instead of it just being the feeds.
Now they're just
you
in
don't
the
have
house.
To listen to the puppies and kittens, though. It's the key.
That's true.
I just love this idea, though, of like not just everyone gets a dog, but everyone brings a different pet, because it's going to just be like a zoo in there. It's gonna be
love
like, we got to get out Fred's iguana. He's stinking.
But like,
up the
okay,
house.
What if you have like the nicest dog and everyone loves it, and they're like, I really want them out, but like, I really love that dog.
No, that's true, actually. It's like, I want to kind of keep them around. Their dog's cool. Kind of want to keep them around for
Or someone brings a snake and then they're like, oh, no, I'm afraid of snakes. We got to vote out Snake Man. So,
ooh, yeah.
And you're like strategic with like the kind of pet you bring. You're like, who brings the snake? Like, what are you trying to say about yourself?
Oh, my pet's not neutered. He's in for a showmance.
Oh my god, we cannot have pet pregnancies in the house. This is not okay. We've got kittens.
I am here for pet showmances personally.
I mean, obviously it depends on the gestation period, but you know, if we do a long season, depending on the animal.
Now, I guess the question would be, so obviously the person who makes it the furthest wins the prize. Does the pet get something, the pet that makes it the furthest?
I'm sure, like, there's a sponsor for that. It's BB Can.
Tickle treats? No? I don't
know. What are tickle treats?
You get them in the tickle trunk.
No, you don't! Unless that's what you're calling the powers.
Here's the thing. There has already been a tickle trunk in the Big Brother house. Howie talked about it.
That's not what... How dare you, Taryn?
That's where they got their tickle treats.
Oh my goodness.
No.
Oh boy.
I'm ruined by this.
I have one more before, because we are clearly going to the dogs quite literally in this one. I have one more twist before we wrap things up. It has to do with the jury, because look, unfortunately, live finales are here to stay, including live jury questioning. And I sort of tweaked this a little bit from the original submission. But what if, so the final three go into finale night, right? What if at the final three, basically, this could be done either way, either the final three answer like five questions and send their answers to the jury who take a look beforehand, or vice versa. They can like pick a jury member, ask them a few questions, and then the jurors respond. And that can sort of get a little bit of a sense. It's not exactly the Q&A that we want to, but it could at least be a way for them to talk a bit in a pre-recorded sense instead of just yelling at the top of their lungs like a certain season six finale.
Yeah, I like this. I think one of the suggestions too is like maybe at the final five, they film something to send to the jury.
Right, because that happened in, did that happen in BB Can 5, right, where the winners came in and they did like the sit down with them?
Yeah, they did something like that. I just feel like anything to give the jurors more information straight from the house guests before they have to make their decision, I think is great. This is my strategy. One of the other suggestions was like, maybe they select one jury member and they get to send like a full unedited video of them expressing whatever they want. And then they have to trust that jury member to convey it to the rest of the house, to the rest of the jury, correctly. Right. So I feel like there are.
I mean, that could easily be sabotaged by the jury member.
Well, right. That's, you have to choose the right jury member.
Yeah.
Could it be a TikTok?
You have 15 60 seconds.
Yeah, you're limited within this. All right, can use visual aids.
I really need you to vote for me. So I'm going to try to do. I'm going to try to do the jump rope while snorting cinnamon up my nose.
And drink a gallon of milk.
Drink a gallon of milk. Please vote for me to win Big Brother Canada.
What's the downside here, right? I like it. I think it's interesting. That makes the jury segments a little bit more interesting, possibly,
and
right?
And they're always hurting for content at the end of the season. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because you could have the, okay, what do I put in my speech? Who do I pick? If they do end up would go with that jury twist. And then, of course, how is that information received? Then you have the jurors that are debating the information. So, yeah, I really like this.
If there's someone you've really upset that you know that you might not get the time to properly like apologize to them or explain why you did something, or, you know, just address something that you you are pretty sure that given the time constraint, either you won't get a question that allows you to go there or what have you, then that's your opportunity to try and win that vote before you even get to finale.
Right. And that's, I remember when we did the Australian Survivor version of this, we talked a lot about maybe the idea of having the ability to like go to Ponderosa and talk with the juror or something. I don't know if we need to go that far to Dan having dinner on the beach with Michelle from BB10. But I do like this idea of everybody getting an ability to maybe pick a juror and then, you know, maybe through question and answer responses via video, being able to send these responses back and forth to at least, because then you'll be able to glean something from each other. You know, the round tables will be more informed rather than just having a lot of biased opinions coming in out of nowhere. And then subsequently, the finalists can then think, okay, I'm getting a sense as to what the jury's thinking about people. Maybe this will inform if I win the final HOH, the decision that I ultimately make.
Yeah.
No downside. I like
it. Let's so we'll send Wendy's. All our final thing off to Wendy's through the drive-thru.
Here we go.
That's all she wrote, unless we have any last minute submissions. I think we've gone through a healthy, probably would say even unhealthy amount of BB Can twists, both good and bad.
Yeah. Well, I feel like now they have no excuse. So when they get it wrong, we can just point to this podcast and be like, hey, look, we gave you
ideas.
I'd recommend you check out hour 1, minute 36, second 21 of our podcast.
And Jenny mentions the tickle trunk.
Here's the thing. We gave you so much time, like a full 2 days before the premiere.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I mean, and with COVID precautions, whatever, come on, they could definitely implement this stuff.
I don't even understand how it's possible that there's no tickle trunk in that house. I just don't.
They can build one so quickly. I'm sure they've got something
similar. I'm pretty sure there's one in that ball pit.
Oh my
it's just
God,
gonna open up
pit.
And just get swallowed up inside it.
How long does it take for somebody to dig all the way down to the bottom of the ball pit and search for something?
Gosh,
I hope.
What else are you gonna do?
Right.
Yeah.
I really hope that that's not like a safe. Like, how deep is it?
Well, the question is, do you think production will allow that?
Children are allowed to play in ball pits, right?
Are they allowed? Are they going to start like whipping balls at each other? You know, like, are they going to break cameras with them, possibly.
I love that, like, ball pits were, like, the one thing that, where it's like, we will never see this again after COVID. Like, this is never happening again. And then BB Can is just like, one last time for old time's sake, guys.
Buffets, ball pits, you name it. It's the apocalypse in the BB house.
Licking each other's faces.
Yes, sneezing back in fashion.
Yeah, I can't wait for the sneezing veto competition.
Ew.
The longest handshake, like endurance, Tom.
Well, that is what we have for you tonight. As we said, in just 2 days, we will have the Big Brother Canada 9 premiere to talk about. And then the night after that, I imagine, is when the feeds are going to start. Who knows? But that's when I would guess. And we'll have lots to talk about, lots of things to complain about when it comes to the twists. And we'll have some fun, right?
Yay!
I'm excited.
It's going to be a good time. And you know, I think no matter what quality the twist came out of here, I think we actually got like a good handful of legitimately fun things and then a lot of silly crap. And so I think it was truly a win-win situation here. And we'll see. Will they get instituted? Maybe they'll save them for BB Can 10. I'm not sure. But I had a great time diving into the think tank. I hope everyone else did as well, as we persevere and the unknown is going to become known, I think, with Big Brother Canada 9.
Yeah. All right. Well, you can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong, if you want to check out some streams that I do. I'll be talking about Big Brother Canada. We've been playing some Among Us and some Fall Guys. I'll be live actually after this podcast to chat with you guys and answer some questions. So you can find me there, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong. Mike, what are you up to? Where can people find you?
Doing a lot of stuff. You can always find me at a Mike Bloom type. I'm podcasting every week here on Rob Has a Podcast. I'm covering the aforementioned Survivor South Africa season 5 with Shannon Gus, in which there is a twist where you are allowed to steal hidden immunity idols. And yes, it does cause drama. So be sure to check that out. That's been very fun. I'm also covering Tough as Nails with Rob and Jessica Leese. And actually this past week, myself, Rob, and the great Jenny Autumn got together to do Outwit, Outplay, Outlist, ranking and rating some of Survivor's most iconic musical moments. It was a gas. Be sure to check that out. And of course, some more brain steel content coming as well. And then over on Post Show Recaps, I'm doing Lost Down the Hatch every week with Josh Wiggler. I'm doing the Bloom Files, an X-Files podcast in which Angela is an obsessive fan of the X-Files, and I have not seen a lick of it until this point. We get to talk through all those alien shenanigans. And if you are a patron of Post Show Recap, something to incentivize you here for March, we got the B&B back together. Myself and Liana Boris spent an hour and a half talking about Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Oh, my God.
This week's Post Show Recap Theater, which actually does prominently feature a ball pit in the climax of the film.
The synergy.
It was a very fun time. So be sure to check that out. And I'm sure much more stuff to come down the line as winter turns to spring. And Taryn, thank you so much for having me on. I came to you with this idea to see if we could entertain the notion. I'm happy we were able to get this in before, you know, everyone's lives get turned upside down and Big Brother enters our bloodstream once more for 2021.
Yeah, this is fun. All right. Well, Liana, what are you up to?
Problem with going after Mike is that everybody's already tuned out already, but I'll do my best. So you can find me on Twitter at LianaRHAP, podcasting about Drag Race, of course. Puya and I will be back soon to talk about The Masked Singer. That's starting in about a week and a half. Very excited for that. And then why did I talk about Ghost Island so much? Well, me, Phil T, and of course, Rob Sesternino are going to be recapping the whole season on Wednesday. It won't be live because of Big Brother Canada, obviously, but you can definitely check that out after the fact. And you can also follow me on Twitch as well, twitch.tv/LianaIsm.
Yo, and Jenny.
I definitely don't have as much going on as these two, but as Mike mentioned, the Outlist podcast from the other day was really fun. Renap over the weekend's been a busy couple of days, just preparing for Big Brother Canada 9. If you haven't checked it out already, Matt Ligori and I did our preseason rankings of the BB Can 9 house guests on robhasawebsite.com. So check that out. And other than that, I'm on all social media at Jenny Autumn. I'm dabbling in the Twitch game here and there if you want to follow me there. And other than that, just getting ready to cover this BB Can season. Super pumped.
All right. Well, of course, we will be live after the premiere of Big Brother Canada 9 with some coverage. And then we'll be live after the Thursday night, I believe, will probably be the first eviction of the season. And then, of course, the live feed updates will start up once we get going with the live feeds, which, again, probably Thursday. So with that, that's what we got. That's what we got for you. Thank you guys so much for joining us tonight, and I will see you all next time.